Welcome, everybody, to Blake and Greg's ACC-SEC Weekly Wrap-Up Podcast. My name's Greg.
And I am Blake.
All right, Blake. Good to have you on. Good to be here.
Yeah, man. Good to be back.
In this
back
little...
after a great Christmas holiday. And, you know, it's 2020 now. Your boys are playing the national championship game here in about 3 days,
That's right.
4 days
That's
or whatever.
Right. Yep.
So you're happy. My team stopped playing football in November. I'm not happy about that. So, you know, at least, you know, it was a good Christmas for me, and I'm still depressed about it, but it is what it is.
Yeah. So speaking of a few days out from the national championship, listeners, we figured how this episode was going to work is we were going to do a little quick recap of the bowl games that involved the ACC or the SEC teams that we predicted just a few weeks ago before Christmas. And it is January 9th. We're also going to offer our prediction for the national championship game that's upcoming. We talked about doing a best of the decade, couple picks for best of the decade from each of us. And what I thought we'd do would be the best player from the last decade, the best team, and also the best individual play. And I think we're still going to do that, but maybe not this episode. I think we'll probably save that for our recap episode of the national championship game. Blake, if that works for you.
Yeah, man, I'm just along for the ride, brother.
Oh, that's it? You're just along for the ride. All right.
Along for the ride. Good for me, man. It's fine.
Easy to please. All right, well, Blake, if it's all the same to you, we can go ahead and get into these games, starting with...
Yeah.
And before we do that, actually, I wanted to point out that, Blake, you went an incredibly impressive 12-4 against the spread with ACC and SEC bowl games. That is... I tip my hat to you, sir. That's excellent, and it caps off a really, really good gambling year for you, at least against the spread. I don't know if you ever put any money on it, but you should have.
No, I'm not a gambler. That's just a road I don't want to go down. It can lead to problems. I don't want to go down that road. But I'll say this: you're 12-4. I remember at the start of the 2014 season, reading that South Carolina was 12-4 against top 25 teams in their last 16 games. So that brings back some really good memories. You know, the 12-4 stat.
That 12-4 is an important ratio.
12-4, it feels like a long time ago, man.
Well, I may be resembling more of South Carolina against top 25 teams with my picks, Blake, because I went a healthy 6-10 against the spread.
Yes, that's more Gamecockish. Well, 6-10. Against anybody is more Gamecockish lately, so there
and,
you go.
Yeah, and we were talking about this. The irony is we did a straight-up pool between you and me and a few other people, and I actually won that pool straight up. And, Blake, I used the same straight-up picks, but against the spread, I just did not do very, very well. But you did fantastic.
27-9 straight-up, which is very impressive, and, so congratulations. And,
but, Blake, you started out going 10 for your first 11 games. Very impressive. So let's go ahead and get into this first game, starting with the December 26th Independence Bowl in Shreveport, Miami, Louisiana Tech. Miami was a 6.5-point favorite. Blake, you picked Louisiana Tech straight up. I actually picked Miami to win and cover barely, but I still picked it. Final score of this game, Blake. This was probably the game of the bowl season. I think we can both agree, right? This was just edge of your seat entertainment. 14-0 Louisiana Tech over Miami. It's not so much surprising, I guess, that Louisiana Tech won. Blake, what is surprising is you don't often see teams shut out in bowl games. And here we have a 14-0 shutout of a Miami team that a lot of people had big expectations for coming into this season. Blake, did you suffer through this game at all? Did you watch any of this game?
I sure did. Yep. I watched almost all of it.
I did, too, because it was one of the only things on at the time.
Yeah, and it was – Look, it was painful for me, and I'm not a Miami fan. I can imagine if you're a Miami fan thinking, my God, what has happened to this program? This is a team that, you know, just 17, 18 years ago was the dominant team in college football.
Right.
And I know that's a long time, but Miami from 82 or 83 till 2002 was the elite program in the country. And they won 5 or 6 national championships in that time span, and all the players, the Sean Taylors, the Vinny Testaverdes, and, you know, down the list of who they had. And then fast forward to now, and it's just a ragtag bunch. The play that typifies Miami's season in the state of their program was, I saw a guy, they were down 7-0 late. That's kind of funny, but they're down 7-0 late. And Louisiana Tech had a third down and like 10 from their own 40 or something, with like maybe, I'm thinking 9 minutes ago in the game or something.
Yeah.
And they throw a little pass out in the flat. He gets like five, short of the first down by about 5 yards or so. Gets hit out of bounds, just, you know, an egregious hit out of bounds, clearly a flag. And when the guy got flagged from Miami, he raised his arms up like he did something.
Oh, yeah, he celebrated.
He celebrated getting flagged, and he extended the drive. They ended up scoring a touchdown to ice the game 14-0.
I forgot about that.
That's where their program is, Greg.
I forgot about that.
You're celebrating late hits.
Yeah, because he got a really good lick on the guy. I remember he was celebrating that.
After the flag was thrown, he's just raising his arms up like he did something.
Yeah, I forgot about that.
That's where that program is, and I don't know how you fix it.
Yeah.
I know they fired Rhett. I mean, they fired Dan Enos and hired Rhett Lashley. And that's a step up. I'm not that big on Rhett Lashley because I've never – he's always worked for a offensive guy, so you never know if he's calling plays or like at Auburn when Malzahn was there or SMU when Sonny Dykes is there. Is he calling the plays or is the head coach? I don't know. Maybe he's a good fit. I don't know. I think he's an improvement from what they had. But the problem runs deeper with Miami, too, though, Greg. There's a big cultural problem there. And until they fix that, Miami's not going to be a factor.
Right. And I think it's time to, for us at least, to maybe learn that Miami tends to start stronger than they finish. At least the last few years they have. And particularly the bowl game, they've underperformed in bowl games. And that was sort of the last straw for Mark Richt last year. In the bowl game, where after that, he quit just a few days after the bowl game because they came out flat, didn't do anything in the bowl game, didn't want to be there.
Yeah, it's helpless.
Yeah, and you know, I remember watching this game and seeing Diaz on the sideline, and he sort of had the same look in his eyes like, my God, what have I got myself into? How do I change this? How do I make these guys care about, even though it is the Independence Bowl, even though we're in Shreveport, how do I make these guys care enough to give a valiant effort in a bowl game on a national stage? How do I do that? And that's a tough hill to climb, and that's something that, like you said, this team has been trending towards that level of apathy for the last 16, 17 or so years. And how do you turn that around? Mark Richt decided it was too steep of a hill for him to climb. You wonder about Manny Diaz, too.
Yeah, I mean, he's, you know, obviously he's not going to – I don't think he's going to quit, but – give him a couple more seasons like that, and he might say, you know, being a DC at a big school is better than this. Yeah, I don't know.
Maybe.
I just don't know how you fix it.
I was just surprised, Blake, because my line of thinking, and I remember saying this when we did picks, was neither of these teams are very good, but I have to assume Miami's got more talent than Louisiana Tech. So you got to go with Miami.
Of course they do.
But Miami, it doesn't matter what talent you have if they don't show up and they don't care about the game and they're celebrating late hits. What do you do with that? You could put the Green Bay Packers against Louisiana Tech. If they're celebrating things like late hits, that it's still up in the air as far as who's going to win that game. Yeah. Louisiana Tech comes away with a good win. Miami falls to 6-7. Anything else with this game, Blake?
No.
Well, let's move metaphorically, at least, to Detroit for the Quick Lane Bowl. Not physically. Let's not move to Detroit.
Thank God.
Pitt and Eastern Michigan. Pitt was an 11-point favorite. Blake, you pick. Oh wait, no, I got one wrong for you. No, wait, no, you. No, I'm sorry. Never mind. I got one wrong for me. I still counted that one. You picked Pitt to win, but not to cover those 11 points. I picked Pitt to win and cover. We both had lower scoring predictions. The final score of this game, Pitt ended up winning 34-30. Pretty darn entertaining game, actually. Pretty evenly matched game. It's also nice to see Narduzzi was over there angry on the sidelines, as per usual. What were your thoughts of this game, Blake?
Entertaining.
Yep.
And this is kind of what bowls should be, Greg. You don't want to watch a 14-0 bowl game. You know what I mean? You want to watch a bowl game that's more or less, and I'm not going to say high scoring, but you want to watch a bowl game with some semblance of offense. You want to be entertained. And both teams came out, and I mean, Eastern Michigan, I think, got a bump because it was in Detroit. I don't know where they're located, but I think it's pretty close. I think it's maybe somewhere like in the suburbs of Detroit. Do you know where it is?
No, but it's got to be closer than Pitt, right?
Yeah. So they probably had some fans there, and I was actually mildly. I mean, I say mildly. It was actually an entertaining game.
Yeah, this was a fun game. You know, back and forth. By the way, Eastern Michigan went out to an early lead. Pitt came back. It was, and then Eastern Michigan came back. It was, I think it was 2017 at the half, and then sort of nip and tuck back and forth the whole game, and Pitt came away with a good win, not by 11 points, as we said, but still, yeah, an entertaining game. I don't know. What the implications are of this game moving forward. Maybe nothing, but it was still an entertaining game to watch. Anything we can draw from this?
Was this a game where the quarterback threw the punch?
Ooh. See, now was I can't, it? I don't know. Now I can't remember.
Now, yeah, was the kid who played with anything Glass or something? The
quarterback
named Glass?
Yeah, it was Glass.
Yeah, he threw a punch.
That's right.
Right?
Yeah.
Am I crazy?
No, that's right. That's right. You're refreshing my memory now.
There's been so many games, it's hard to keep up with. I mean, this game, it feels like it happened a year ago.
Right, know? Right. This was December 26th, so we're going on. That was over 2 weeks ago, so yeah. Let's see. Yeah, oh, no, yeah, he spit on him too, didn't he?
Yeah, it was a spear through a punch. He spit and got ejected, right?
That's right. All right, yes.
He was having a good game.
All right.
Glass is his name.
Yes.
Glass
so,
Joe.
Yeah, Glassy Joe. And I remember him getting thrown out, and I was like, what did he get thrown out for, like, jawing at the guy? I was like, what did he say to get thrown out? It's got to be pretty egregious to get thrown out. And then it came out that, no, yeah, he spit through his face mask into the other guy's face mask, which I don't know if I've ever seen before. That doesn't.
No, that's gross, man. He should be – I mean, he should be suspended for a game next year.
And actually, that was McGill.
Or he may be a senior, I don't know.
That was McGill did the spitting, Glass did the punching, now that I'm thinking about
okay,
it.
Okay, there
yes.
we go.
Yeah,
there we
yeah.
go.
That's right. I'm glad you mentioned that. I forgot about that. But yeah, other than
that's
that.
A bit more personal.
Yeah. It is kind of funny that two teams that don't know or have anything to do with each other, that level of animosity.
Yeah, it's kind of, okay, well. We saw another game like that, and we'll talk about it later, which, like, teams who don't have a history, for some reason, they're
chippy.
They don't like each other, you know?
Yeah. And, of course, I like that. Of course, Narduzzi's upset, as per usual, but we like to see him upset, too.
I mean, Narduzzi's not upset, man. There's something wrong in the world, man, and I love when he's upset.
Very true.
Some guys are douchebags and they're upset. He's not. You know, I don't know why, but
he's got a lot of practice.
Like Gene Purdue, man. Gene Cady was like that, the basketball coach.
Yeah.
Same way. Always just upset, but it was a charming upset. You know, he's kind of charming, but so that's I think it's how Narduzzi is.
Anything else from this game?
No, I don't have anything else. Do you?
Nope. Punches, spitting. That's about all we can talk about of that one, I guess.
It's a lot.
Yeah, it is. Let's talk about the Military Bowl in Annapolis, North Carolina, and Temple. North Carolina was a 5-point favorite, and Blake, they came in and just whooped up on Temple. I thought that Temple was going to be able to at least slow down that North Carolina offense a little bit. Temple actually has a pretty solid defense, but no, that was not going to be the case.
Yeah,
too much
exactly.
Sam Howell. Sam Howell was just, he was fantastic. Mm-hmm. I'm very eager to see what he does next year. He was 25 for 34, 294 yards, 3 touchdowns, no picks. Man, if that's a good defense that he did all that against, he is something really special. And I think we've seen enough to make that.
Yeah, I mean, Temple, they were known for their defense this year. Their offense was kind of shaky, but they're, you know, good defense. But, you know, it's a different animal playing against UNC. Because UNC really, you know, Phil Longo, I've always liked him as an offensive coordinator. I love their coordinators, Bateman, too. I like them both.
Yes.
Longo has more to work with than Bateman does right now. But Mack Brown, really, for a first year, if you're a Tar Heel fan, you got to be pretty excited because – not only do you go 7-6, and not just 7-6, but a good 7-6 to where you lost a lot of games that were close. You know, you in fact, I don't think they were blown out one game this year. I think every game they lost by one score or less.
I want to say every game they won was like one score or a few or two.
Yeah, except for this Temple game.
Except for this one.
And what and like Temple, Western Carolina, and Georgia Tech. I think the rest of them they won. Was by a touchdown or less, too. So.
And NC State. They smoked NC. Well, okay, there were a few. Actually, there were a few.
Well, for a while there was like every game for a while. They had a stretch where it was like every game was close.
Yes. In fact, their first five or six games were all one possession games. They lost to Virginia Tech by 2. They beat Duke by 3. They lost to Virginia by 7. They lost to Pitt by 7. And then they smoked Mercer and NC State and then now Temple.
Okay. And this is a team you got to think too, Greg. Going into next year, you got Howell back. You got Brown, the receiver, back. You've got, unless Newsom turns pro, I think he'll be back. He's a junior. He can turn pro. Be smart for him to come back because this is a deep receiving class this
year. It is.
Actually, one of the deepest I've seen in a long time. Really, really deep. And then you got running back Williams is back, and so is Carter. And then you got, on defense, a lot of injuries. Those guys should be healthy next year. Throw in a top 20 recruiting class.
Oh, they.
I mean, so things, if you're a UNC fan, I'm going to go ahead and call it right now. This is your favorite in the Coastal next year.
Yes.
I don't think there's any doubt about that. This
yes.
is definitely the favorite in the Coastal. I just don't see anybody else. Because you look at, like, Miami, yeah, right, Miami's a favorite. They're not even close. Virginia Tech, they finished 76 in recruiting. You see that?
I saw that, yeah.
76. That, I don't really understand what's going on up there.
Well, and Virginia is losing, they're losing Perkins this year.
A lot, right? but they has a very veteran team this year. I think they'll take a step back, too.
Yep.
So, yeah, UNC next year, I think it's going to be the runaway favorite to win that division.
Yeah, Georgia Tech's not there yet. Pitt, probably Pitt, not.
But no.
So yeah, next year, and plus next year is when it resets anyway, since all seven teams have now won the Coastal in the last 10 years.
Yeah, so UNC could easily, and I think they'll be the overwhelming favorite to win that division next year. And, you know, I mean, ask Clemson. This is a good, I mean, UNC was very close to winning that football game. So.
Yes, they were.
Against a Clemson team that hadn't lost since, Noah built the Ark, So you got to give them credit. I mean, Mac Brown has really surprised me with, and I guess I guess Mac is understanding his role. He's kind of the Dabo Sweeney role up there. He's recruiting, CEO, motivator, and he hires good coordinators and good assistants. So that's what he's done. And look out. If you're a Tar Heel fan, look, good things are going to happen. I feel really confident about that.
I agree. And it's also nice for UNC fans right now because the basketball team is floundering a bit. So it's nice to at least have something to hang your hat on if you're a UNC fan. And I agree. I think they'll be the overwhelming favorite in the Coastal next year. All right. You want to move on?
Move on.
Let's talk Pinstripe Bowl, specifically Wake Forest, Michigan State. Michigan State was a 4.5-point favorite. Blake, we both picked Michigan State to win and cover, and they did. Final score 27-21. And this was a fun game, too.
It was
competitive. One thing
absolutely.
I'll say, I think we
had a lead for a good chunk of the game, too.
Yeah, and I think we both sort of banked on Wake Forest. You know, we talked about them towards the end of the season, they don't have the depth that a lot of other teams do, and we sort of banked on them maybe not being full strength, and they weren't. Surratt wasn't playing. A few other key guys weren't playing.
I mean, they're healthier, but they still weren't healthy.
Right, they were healthier, and actually Jamie Newman, who, by the way, is transferring. I don't know if you saw that.
Is there a reason why?
I'm sure, but I don't know what that reason is. But he is transferring, entered the transfer portal. He was 12 of 27, which doesn't sound great, but 3 touchdowns and 1 pick, which is okay. But
is he going to be a grad transfer or just a transfer?
I think a grad transfer.
Okay.
I'll have to
go
ahead and check his status real quick, but I want to say he's grad transfer. Let's see. No, he's a junior. So he's transferring somewhere and sitting out a year.
Is he a redshirt junior?
All I see is junior. I don't see redshirt. So.
Like, he is a junior now or will be a junior?
That's a good question.
I guess unless he graduated in 3 years.
Which that's, I don't know if you can do, that's not really very common at Wake, I wouldn't think.
No, it isn't. I mean, that's common at other schools, but Wake Forest typically don't see that.
Blake, at Clemson, we crank them out in 3 years, no problem.
Yeah, you do a good job with that, that's for sure.
Yeah, Blake, you go in the football facility and you climb up the stairs and you get on the slide, and when you hit the bottom, they put that cap on your head, and, you know, that's your...
Hey, look, by any means necessary, I'm all for it. I wish we did the same damn thing.
But, yeah, so Jamie Newman's transferring. That's tough. That's a big blow for Wake Forest.
It is.
For sure. Don't know what they have in the cupboard as far as quarterback's concerned, but I know he was actually a little bit underrated in terms of his skill set and what he could do there. But, yeah, this was a fun game. The two pretty evenly matched teams, and we thought this was probably going to be the case, but we also thought that Michigan State probably had a little too much for Wake because, like we said, the war of attrition,
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah, it's just, yeah, exactly. Michigan State this year was very average too. I mean, they were a very average team, but you know, just a program with a little, I mean, more resources, they can handle injuries better. It's kind of thought that's what would happen. But I mean, give Wake credit for being at least competitive.
Sure, and actually, they kept it a little bit closer than I thought they would, to be
Yeah,
honest.
me too. Me too.
So let's see. How about? Oh, this is a fun one. You want to move on to the Texas Bowl?
Yep.
All right. So the
Who?
Texas
Oh,
Bowl.
Texas Bowl, yeah.
Well, it was more to it than that. I shortened it to the Texas Bowl. What was the official name? It's the oh yeah, it's
Doesn't matter.
the Academy Sports and Outdoors Texas Bowl.
You get a free box of ammo when you go in the game.
Yeah. Well, I would have probably gone then if that's the case.
I would have gone too, especially if they got, you know, double op buck or something.
Plus, this is a great matchup on paper. I have a lot of, you know, I have a soft spot for Texas A&M for a lot of reasons. I also have a soft spot for Oklahoma State and the
Yeah, I
mullet.
got a soft spot for my man Mike Gundy.
I love Mike Gundy. I love the mullet. When it flaps in the breeze, it's something glorious about that. But and plus just these two teams, the history, you know, Big
Yep.
12, old Big 12 rivals,
Yep.
seemingly pretty evenly matched on paper coming into this game. The history between them, Gundy versus Fisher, and it was every bit as great as advertised. Final score of this game, 24-21. Let's see, Blake. This is one of the few I know. Here's a good example. You picked Oklahoma State to win, but. Because of that means you got the points. You got a little backdoor cover there. I picked A&M to win and cover, and they did not. But you picked Oklahoma
Little
State to win.
backdoor. What was the spread?
The spread was A&M by 7. And the final score, 24-21 A&M. So they did come away with a win. And yeah, Blake, this was a fun game. I'm sure you watched this game, right?
Yeah, I did. It was a fun game, and I of course found myself pulling for Oklahoma State. I'm sorry,
I
A&M fans.
was
I mean,
actually.
nothing to say. You know, I just like Mike Gundy, and I guess I don't know. I have a soft spot for him. And I have a soft spot for A&M too, but more so without Jimbo Fisher. I don't know
Yeah.
why. I'm just not a big Jimbo Fisher guy. He's a pretty good coach, but I don't know. So I found myself pulling for Oklahoma State, but I actually enjoyed the game a lot. I mean, A&M's it's a pretty good football team. You know, Oklahoma State is too. You know, but A&M's a little bit deeper, a little bit better right now, a little bit more talent, and that showed in the final score,
Well,
you know.
and this was one that I don't want to say A&M needed, but they kind of did because
They kind of, yeah, I agree with that. They kind of did.
they were coming in 7-5, and we've talked about this. We've talked about the five teams they lost to. Who was it?
It was a
Clemson,
very good 7-5, by the way.
Auburn, LSU, Bama, and Georgia, right? No shame in losing any of those teams. And in fact, they played a lot of them pretty close. They didn't play LSU close or Clemson, but they were fairly competitive in a few of those games. So you can look and say, all right, well, those are the teams that's sort of acceptable to lose to, but you gotta win one against an upper tier sort of team, and they kind of needed this to show that they could do it, and they ended up getting the win over a ranked, even though they're ranked 25, over a ranked and a really pretty darn solid Oklahoma State team. So hats off to A&M and hats off to Jimbo for getting that win.
Momentum for next year.
Yeah, no, that's it. I think that will pay dividends next year,
Because
actually.
I think this team, I'm gonna go ahead and make a prediction. This team could compete for the West next year.
Well, let's think about the West next year. You've got Alabama without Tua. We don't know what to expect. You've got
Well,
Joe.
not only about, I think also you're gonna lose Henry Ruggs, you lose Jerry Jeudy, and maybe DeVonta Smith too.
That's true.
If you lose all those receivers and you lose, of course, Tua, and Najee Harris is gone too, running back.
Yeah.
And the defense right now for Alabama is iffy. I mean, Bama's, you know, I know they reload, but I'm not sure they'll be ready next year.
So some question marks at Bama, which that doesn't happen very often. LSU loses a lot, as we know. It's kind of do or die for LSU, I would say, this year. They kind of have to get it
Yeah,
done.
especially because of Burrow. You're not going to find a
Yes.
guy to come in next year and do what he did. I don't care. I don't care who your coach is. You're not gonna find a guy to put up his numbers. You're just not gonna have it.
So then otherwise you've got Ole Miss and Mississippi State, which, by the way, we heard a big bombshell news, a piece of news today, that Mike Leach is going to be taking the head job at Mississippi State. You heard that, right?
Oh, I didn't hear he's gonna take the job. I heard his interview and he's gonna take
No,
the job.
he's got it. He's got it.
Wow.
Yes.
Good for them, man. Good for them.
So that is the most interesting Egg Bowl matchup between two coaches ever. Gotta be.
Oh, God. Well, think about the West now. Think about the West now.
Yes.
You got Mike Leach at Mississippi State. You got Lane Kiffin, an offensive guy at Ole Miss.
Yep.
Bama runs wide open spread now. You got Chad Morris. I mean, he's running the offense at Auburn now.
Yes.
You got Kendall Browse running the offense at Arkansas now.
Yes.
You got Joe Brady at LSU doing his offense. And you got Texas A&M, who is not as wide open, but as Jimbo Fisher, who's won a national championship and has put a consistent offense on the field. That has turned into, it used to be a defensive side. I mean, more defense, but it's offense now, man. That Western Division is kind of like the Big 12 on steroids.
Right, and it might take a year or two for things to settle and for guys and for these teams to equip themselves with the kinds of players that they need. But, yeah, moving forward, it's going to be really interesting. Now, so we're talking next year, question marks at Alabama, question marks at LSU. Auburn, yeah, there's always question marks at Auburn.
You just never know what to expect at Auburn.
Mississippi State and Ole Miss, not quite there yet. Arkansas, not quite there yet. Yeah, A&M.
You say not quite there yet, and I agree. But with the other, but I think the division's going to be a little bit down because you're going to lose so many good players.
Yeah.
Maybe they can rise up. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
With the division down, you never know.
That's true. Be interesting to see. So A&M did need this win to come into next year with maybe a little bit of momentum, a little bit of goodwill, you know. So anything else with the Houston Bowl or the Texas Bowl? Sorry, the Academy Sports and Outdoors Texas Bowl.
Yeah, I mean Kellen Mond's back next year, right? I think he's gonna be a senior, so he's back next year. So that's a big not a get, but a big keep for them.
Right.
I think.
Right. And even though he's not a superstar, he has potential, and he's probably, and yes, just having that level of experience goes a long way in a leadership role.
Exactly. And a guy who you would think will be a little bit better next year and more familiar with what Jimbo Fisher does. So yeah, I think that, yeah, I mean, A&M next year could be a contender in that division.
Yep.
I don't have any doubt about that.
Yep. All right, Blake, let's talk the Music City Bowl, of course, in Nashville. Speaking of Mississippi State and Louisville, we thought this would be a good game. This actually was a pretty interesting game.
It was.
Louisville ended up beating Mississippi State 38-28. We actually both did pick Louisville to win this game. In fact, I remember when we were picking this game, we both just said, hey, you know, I think Louisville's a better team.
And I just have more confidence in Scott Satterfield than I did Joe Moorhead.
Right. And as it turns out,
I didn't expect Moorhead to be fired.
Yeah.
But it was really weird because it happened at, you know, it was one of those things, I mean, it makes you wonder if they wanted him to go through the early signing period, you know, because I think they had a top 25 class and, you know, get those signees in and then fire them, which I think is kind of dirty if that's what they did.
Well, or, Blake, it makes you wonder if maybe they had reached out to Mike Leach and he had expressed interest because
the timing is just strange.
Right. It seems very weird to do that unless you got a guy in mind that you're pretty confident you can get, or like you said, unless you just want to keep some of those recruits,
but that doesn't
always work. You know, guys, well,
well,
I guess,
once they sign, though, you get the early signing.
That's right.
December.
Once you sign. Yeah.
I mean, guys sign early now, so they probably got most of their guys that already signed on the dotted line. Old wrestling term, you sign on the dotted line. You know?
And plus, if you signed, especially on offense, if you're one of these guys who signed, you're probably a lot happier to see Mike Leach than you are Joe Moorhead anyway.
Especially if you're a receiver.
Yes.
Yeah. Yeah, and quarterback, too. I mean, I think this is – that's the kind of guy you need. I mean, if you're Mississippi State, or really Ole Miss too with Lane Kiffin, you need somebody out of the box, I think. And both those guys are. I think Mike Leach is a genius. I always thought that. And Lane Kiffin, I think, bringing in Lebby from Central Florida to run his offense. Lebby, I love his offense. He's Art Briles' son-in-law. So he's kind of brought up in that crazy Art Briles system, which I think is the best system I've ever seen in my life as far as offense goes. So you throw those things in it, you know, and you get Kiffin with his schematic formation knowledge with Lebby spread concepts, boom, and you got Mike Leach with his genius of, you know, quarterback coaching and the short passing game. And, I mean, look at the guys who have led the nation in passing who have played for him. So I mean, State of Mississippi is in a lot better shape. And I like Matt Luke a lot, but I like the hires they made. I think both schools definitely upgraded.
Yeah, and let's just take a second and step back and examine the personalities that we'll have at the head coaching position in the West, where you've got you've got Saban, who's the Bill Belichick of college football, and just stoic and always in a bad mood, not in an endearing bad mood like Narduzzi's, just always in a bad mood. You've got Coach Orgeron, that everybody loves, this gruff, authentic, salt of the earth Cajun. You've got Jimbo Fisher, who's kind of just he's kind of the least, I guess, interesting personality.
Boring.
You know, then you've got
Sam Pittman. Do you?
I don't know much about him yet, but
I don't either.
Then you got Lane Kiffin, who he's the kind of guy who says whatever he wants. He's sort of, I don't want to say he's a modern day Spurrier, but he's a troll in the same vein as Spurrier. And then you got Mike Leach, who you never know what's going to come out of his mouth.
I think the two best interviews. I think Mike Leach is the best interview in college football. I also like Mike Gundy a lot.
Yes.
But Lane Kiffin. Of course, Ed Orgeron, his Cajun charm and the Gold Tigers and all that stuff, and Joe Burrow, and he's extremely likable. So yeah, that it's got a lot more fun. And of course, we know Sam Pittman. I don't know much about Sam Pittman, but I know his hires for coordinators were great.
Great,
I thought. With Odom and Briles. So I mean, it's really been a fun offseason. If you're in the West, it's been pretty incredible, in fact. And even like the coordinator, like you know, Chad Morris going to Auburn. I mean, it's going to be fun to watch the West next year. I mean, that's going to be a extremely fun, much more fun than the East.
And I'll tell you this, it's going to turn SEC Media Days into must-see TV for me, and I don't normally say that. I'll catch it here and there, but I'm actually going to intently watch it this summer for these new coach personalities coming to the forefront. Music City Bowl in perhaps the ugliest stadium I've ever seen in person. I don't even know the name of the stadium in Nashville, but it's where the Titans play. Really hideous. I don't know if you've seen it. But anyway, Louisville came away with a win, 38-28. Louisville is just probably a better team and for sure, I would say, better coached. And now Mississippi State has a different coach. So all's well for them, too, and probably a better coach. I think we can both agree.
Yep, I agree.
All right, how about the Orange Bowl? Virginia and Florida, ACC versus SEC. I'll tell you, Blake, the final score of this game was 36-28. But I was actually really proud of Virginia, the fight that they put up in this game.
They fought hard.
They fought very hard. I think most people would agree that Florida is maybe a significantly better team than Virginia, but nevertheless, it was not an easy day for Florida. Virginia was fighting hard throughout this whole game. And let's give hats off to Perkins. Bryce Perkins,
had a heck of a career.
Heck of a career at Virginia. We saw him do great things all season long, and actually for a few years now. Had a pretty decent game against Clemson, especially early. Had a decent game, put up some good numbers, and then also in this game,
his problem is he couldn't play DB.
Right. Yes. Exactly. maybe he could actually, but they didn't give him a chance.
Yeah, they probably needed him back there because they were getting torched. It was a lot of fun, man.
Perkins was 28-40 against a really solid Florida defense. 323 yards, 4 touchdowns, 1 pick, and also he had some. He was the leading rusher, only 24 yards, but was the leading.
Well, almost always leads him in rushing, doesn't he? But the problem with Virginia was that
one dimension.
As good as Perkins was, he didn't have a lot of help.
Yeah, it was just him.
And it's hard to win a lot of games. I mean, you can win some games, but to beat a team like Florida, you got to have more than just Bryce Perkins. And I like Perkins, and I think Bronco Mendenhall. He's probably the ACC Coach of the Year. Would you say it's probably Mendenhall? Would you guess that's who it would be?
Well, Satterfield.
Yeah, Satterfield too. Yep. But I think Mendenhall's a good coach.
I wouldn't have any problem with it if it were Mendenhall. And now Blake, you know, I'd throw Mack Brown in the mix, to be honest.
Yeah, Mack Brown's got to be in the mentions. I would go probably Satterfield 1, Mendenhall 2, Mack Brown 3,
Dabo 4.
Don't get me started on him, man. Don't get me started on that guy, man, who's defies everything logical that I know. But anyway.
Well, we will get to him, by the way, but we've got a few games to go through first. This was a fun game. Florida was a 14-point favorite. We actually both picked Florida to win by 15. We picked the exact same score. And I was pleasantly surprised with the amount of effort that Virginia put in this game. I don't know that they were ever in real threat of winning this game, but they certainly kept Florida on their toes throughout the whole thing.
And Florida couldn't get rid of them.
They couldn't slip away. You're right. They couldn't get rid of them.
They couldn't get rid of them, and that's a credit to Bronco Mendenhall and Bryce Perkins and all those guys. And Florida's Florida. Look, Dan Mullen's a great coach. I've always thought that. Kyle Trask saved this team, frankly, whenever
Franks
got hurt. And Trask had a good – I mean, Trask is just steady Eddie. That guy's – he always seems to have a good game. Throw for 280, have a pretty good percentage. I think he ran the ball decently in this game, too, if I remember correctly.
He did.
So Florida next year – I almost think Florida's a favorite in the East.
Well, especially with what's happened with Georgia, because now we know Fromm's leaving.
Fromm's gone.
Swift's gone.
It's gone, and their offense is in the Stone Ages. I know Kirby Smart can recruit. They got a lot of talent down there. It's probably as much talent as anybody in the country, frankly. They got a lot of talent in Athens, Georgia. But I'm not a big fan of what they do offensively. I don't think you can do that, what Smart wants to do offensively in 2020.
They're going to have a tough time doing it. They're going to have a tough time keeping up, especially with teams in the West in a few years.
You can beat teams that you're supposed to beat, but when it comes to these big games and you play LSU, you saw what happened. I mean, you can't – I mean, LSU finally figured out, hey, let's do something different, and look what it's gotten them. A lot of teams have figured this out, but you have to – I mean, college football is not what it used to be. And the old Alabama formula under Nick Saban early on, run the football, play defense, win 17-6, doesn't work anymore. And Kirby Smart hasn't figured that out yet. So I like Florida as far as that division next year. As of right now, I kind of think Florida's a favorite. But, you know, we'll see what happens.
Right.
I'm sure Georgia wished Justin Fields was still around, because he'd be their quarterback next year.
Yeah,
so
absolutely. And I don't know if you saw the clip of the press conference before this game, Blake, where they asked Bronco Mendenhall. They said, "What would a win over Florida in the Orange Bowl? What would it mean to you? What would it mean to your program?" I don't know if you caught this. Did you catch his answer?
No, what did he say?
It was great. He said, "Well, Virginia in their 120 or however many years, Virginia in their 120 year football history, we have one 10 win season." That was his answer. That was his whole answer. And so this would have been this would have been the 10th win. And it was funny because that's all he said, and nobody knew if he was done or not. And actually, if you look over, Dan Mullen was cracking up. Like, even Dan Mullen thought it was a funny answer, and I thought that was a funny answer too.
Yeah,
that's it.
Yeah,
I don't need to explain this anymore. We've had one 10 win season ever.
Yeah, but I mean, I didn't catch that. But that's very well said.
Yeah.
I actually like him, man. I think he's a good coach, and I think that, you know, they've kind of recruited better. That, you know, before he got there, it was Virginia Tech that was recruiting good. They kind of flipped the script on him a little bit.
Yes.
They're trying to recruit good. And of course, the guys in Blacksburg, man, I don't know what's going to happen there.
Weird. Yeah, very strange.
Yeah, it's just odd to me that they 76.
And you know, a lot of times you don't put too much stock into the rankings, but you do when it's 76.
Yeah, I mean, if a team finishes 30 or 15, it's hard to tell.
Right.
But when the team finishes 76, I think it's cause for concern. I mean, I'm not saying that, look, a lot of three-star and two-star players turn to be really good players.
Yep.
A lot of them do.
Mm-hmm.
And a lot of it's about evaluation. It's about signing guys. I mean, how did you evaluate this guy? And some coaches are really good at that, and some aren't. But I haven't seen any evidence to say that Fuente is that great of a talent evaluator. I mean, I don't know. He may be. But look, at the end of the day, Greg, I think every team who's won a national championship – has had at least, was it like one top five class maybe?
You know, for a while, that's what it was. I don't know if it's top five anymore. I'm pretty sure it's top 10. Like the last 10 national champions have had at least one top 10 class on their roster when they won or something like that, yeah.
Yeah, I think it's top five.
It was for a while, but I think...
Who changed that?
I don't know if it was us.
No, I thought y'all had a top five class, you know, you mixed in there when you got Watson and those guys. Man, I could be wrong, but maybe it's top 10, but So it means, look, you got to have, in the day, yeah, a lot of three stars or two stars are great players, but you need those star players. Like the guys who come in right away and they belong, I think. And you don't get those guys with a class rank 76th. I just don't think you can do it. Now, those guys can end up being good down the road, but the guys who can step in right away and be difference makers, that's not common with guys who are two and three star guys. It happens, but it's not very common.
Yep, that's true. All right, let's move on. Let's talk Belk Bowl, which, by the way, the final Belk Bowl. I don't know who's going to buy the rights to that game, but I will be sad to see the Belk Bowl go. Charlotte, North Carolina. This was New Year's Eve at 12 p.m. This is that first slate of games. Kentucky, Virginia Tech. Virginia Tech was a 3-point favorite. I picked Virginia Tech to win and cover. I don't know if you remember my rationale. I said, Blake, I have to believe that Bud Foster in his last game is going to be able to stifle a one-dimensional Kentucky offense. I have to believe that.
Figure that out.
Yeah, and he did not. They did not stifle a one-dimensional. And, Blake, when I say one-dimensional, Kentucky completed 6 passes and ran the ball 55 times. Mm-hmm. So that's about as one-dimensional as you can get. But the absolute hero of this game, no doubt in anyone's mind, MVP of this game easily, they didn't even probably have to take a vote, was Bowden. Bowden Jr., 34 carries, 233 yards, 2 touchdowns, and 6 of 12, which, come on, man, 6 of 12, 73 yards, 1 touchdown, and 1 pick.
Game-winning touchdown.
The game-winning touchdown, which was a beautiful play call, actually, because everybody and their mom assumed that this was going to be a running play because pretty much 9 out of every 10 are with this offense. But he had the nice little throw over the top and found his receiver in the end zone.
He put it right there, man. He put it in. He was
great throw.
I mean, he was open, but he wasn't wide open.
Right.
So, I mean, it had to be a good throw, and he just made a perfect throw. You have to give him credit.
And I got to give credit not only to him because he threw some passes where you're like, okay, he's not a quarterback, because he's not.
Yeah.
But then, like this one he threw, and you're like, you know, that was a good throw, actually. But I also have to give credit, Blake, to Stoops. And I don't like doing it.
Job.
But a heck of a job because, you know, I think there's a lot to be said about a coach that adapts to hardships on the team, adapts to changes in the team, whether it's transfers, whether it's injuries, whatever, and can still come away winning. And that's exactly what Stoops has done. He's figured out a way to win, even though it's outside his comfort zone and it's outside maybe what he initially planned on doing. A lot of respect goes out to him from me, and I give him a lot of crap too. So I have to eat a little bit of crow when it comes to him.
And I don't know who the offensive coordinator is, but he's done a great job too, because to kind of mold your offense around one guy and be one-dimensional like that and still be successful.
Yeah.
I mean, there's got to be some credit given to him, because if you know what's coming and you still can't stop it, and they spanked Louisville last game of the year too against a good football team.
Oh, God, they spanked them.
So they really peaked, and they played good ball. And
Blake, they spanked Louisville, and they threw the ball 2 times.
Yeah, I mean, Kentucky just – I mean, they're playing, I guess, Stoops ball up there now. I don't know. Yeah, I mean, he's done a great job there. He's really exceeded my expectations. And Kentucky, you went 8-5, because I expected Kentucky to not go to a bowl this year, because they lost a ton off last year's team. And they don't rebuild up there. Reload up there. They have to rebuild. I'm thinking it's a 5-7 football team.
Yeah.
And they come in and heck, they win 8 games. And they do it with injuries and adapt and conform. And what can you say? Just a great coaching job. I mean,
and by the way, Blake,
I don't like Stoops either, but geez, he's done a heck of a job.
By the way, Bowden, I keep wanting to say Bowden because it's just, you know.
His name's spelled Bowden.
Right, but Bowden broke the bowl record for rushing yards by a quarterback. Do you know whose record he broke?
Rushing yards by a quarterback.
In a bowl game.
In a bowl game.
I'll give you a hint. It ain't very old. Less than 10 years, I'll say that.
less than 10 years, I'll say Johnny Manziel.
Yes, sir. Johnny Manziel against Oklahoma. In
the Cotton Bowl.
Yep, 2013.
There we go. Yeah, okay. Yeah. I remember Manziel, man. I remember he went off in one game. I can remember if that was a Duke game or the Oklahoma game.
He went off in the Duke game, too.
I think more passing that game.
Yeah, yeah. But, yeah, he went off.
Yeah, people forget how good he was.
Yes. And part of that
Johnny
is...
Johnny Manziel was a really, really good player.
And part of that's because of NFL career and pro career and, you know...
Exactly. People put too much stock in that. But in college, that guy, I mean, he was incredible. And he just... If he would have had the work ethic and the maturity, I think he would have been the next Russell Wilson type.
Yeah, could have been.
But he didn't have that, and he washed out, and his family had money. He didn't want it bad enough, and, you know, he's gone now, but he might be surfing in the XFL. I don't know how that's going to work. But yeah, I mean, he was a great player, and then Bowden didn't have the luxury of saying, well, they got to respect my throwing ability, too. He didn't have that luxury.
Right, I mean, he did with Manziel.
Yeah. I'm running, and you got to stop me, and they couldn't stop him.
Yeah.
So I'm intrigued to see where he lands in the NFL. It's not going to be quarterback, of course, but he's an athlete.
He is a heck of an athlete.
You think some team will take a chance on him in the later rounds is maybe a receiver, maybe a almost like an H-back. I mean, he's just got too much. He has too much of a skill set to not play at the next level.
No, I agree. It'll be interesting to see where he goes.
You know? Yeah.
All right, Blake, let's talk Sun Bowl in El Paso. This was also New Year's Eve, and this pitted the mighty Florida State Seminoles against Arizona State. You win to play the game. Final score of this game, Blake. Herm Edwards did, or sorry, win to play. You play the game. You play to win the game. I screwed that up.
That's what Arizona State did.
Yep, they did. 20-14.
I like Herm Edwards, and I like
him. He's got great sound bites. I know that, but
go ahead.
20-14 final score of this game. By the way, Arizona State was a 4-point favorite. This is one of the few that we both picked up and guessed correctly. Neither one of us picked it quite this low scoring, but at the same time, 20-14 was the final score. Blake, and this was, I'm going to be honest with you, I was watching this game and neither of these teams particularly impressed me. The big thing for me was Arizona State had a lot of success in the trenches. Florida State's got significant problems. Stop me if you've heard this before. They've got significant problems on O-line.
Yeah, they've had those problems for years.
I don't get it.
Me neither. I mean, I just don't understand. I mean, if you're a Florida State fan, you just got to forget what's happened. I mean, it's over. There's a new sheriff in town. I think he's a great coach. I think he was basically why Fuente got a job at Virginia Tech, because I think Norvell was the brains behind that gig. I firmly believe that as an offensive coordinator and now, of course, in the head coach. I think it was the right fit for Florida State. Now, I could be wrong, and then we'll see what happens, but they need a new direction, and they need a direction – a more innovative direction, and I think that Norvell is a perfect fit for what they need to do, not even want to do, but need to do. So, look, I mean, it was a dumb hire to hire
Willie
Taggart, and Jimbo left them in bad shape. Sorry, Jimbo, you did. I mean, he wasn't exactly tearing it up when he was there his last year. So he was in bad shape, and of course Willie couldn't. He made it worse, and then. And now you have Florida State, you know, is a kind of forgotten program, but there's too much pride there, they have too many advantages not to be good.
Yeah.
They have too many advantages. So they'll be good again, and I think with Norvell, it'll be sooner rather than later.
I think it was a right hire for them, I agree.
Yeah.
We talked briefly about Florida State offensive line. Obviously, that's a cause for concern. Blake, Arizona State ended up with 4 sacks and also – 4 interceptions that I think were directly attributed, some of them at least, to quarterback pressure. Poor Blackman. This is his third year, right?
Yeah, he'll be a senior next year, I guess. Right?
And he was just abused week in and week out for pretty much 3 years.
He does not have
the
weight to be abused like that.
I know, and that's what makes it even worse. And it's funny because it seems like every time they show him playing, they talk about how he's gained weight, and you're like, I don't see it. I don't know how that's possible. But then they'll bust out a picture of him from high school, and he's, you know, six, however tall, and like 130 looks like, and you're like, well, I guess he did gain a little bit of weight.
I think he's a freshman with 6'5", 170.
Let's see. They have him listed, Blake. Oh, man. They have him listed 6'5", 195.
I don't think he's 195.
I don't think he is either, but yeah, he was probably.
I mean, I don't think he's 170. I think he's probably like 180.
But yeah, he's a smaller guy, and you know, sometimes you might get away with being a little bit smaller, but not when you're running for your life and have guys in your face every play like he does, unfortunately. He got abused this game, and he had four picks, but I do think a lot of that's just him having guys in his face all game.
And hopefully his senior year he'll have a lot of milkshakes and pizza, and he'll be a new coach with a new system that'll maybe hide some of their offensive line inefficiencies.
Wouldn't you love it if somebody came to you, Blake, and they were like, we need you to gain 25 pounds in the next 8 months or so? That'd be great.
Yeah, I would start now.
Yeah, and it'd be pretty easy. I think I'd enjoy that.
That's a really good chocolate chip mint milkshake, wherever that is.
I picked one up yesterday because I'm not sure when they're stopping that. So I got to take advantage while you can.
I complained about that and said you should never stop it, but they don't listen to me. So.
You should write a letter. Never. Write a letter,
Blake. Write a letter.
All right, Blake, let's move on. Let's talk Citrus Bowl. This game was a New Year's Day game, which, by the way, I don't know if you felt like I felt. New Year's Day was underwhelming, and part of that is because the college football playoff games were so far in advance, the New Year's game. There was such a detachment from those games with, you know, the new, because you're supposed to take them all together.
On a Wednesday, it was just kind of odd.
Yeah. So yeah, it was a little different this time around for me. But so let's see, the Citrus Bowl. We had Michigan and Bama. It seems like Michigan comes down to the state of Florida every bowl season and plays and gets beat. And Bama was a 7-point favorite. Final score, Bama ended up winning 35-16. This was yet another one that not only did we agree on, but we both picked against the spread correctly. There weren't many of those that we both got. You got plenty. I didn't get a lot. But this one we did. Blake, what were your big takeaways, if any, from this game?
Well, I think the Bama quarterback, Jones, is that
yep,
his name?
Yep, that's it.
He's solid. He's no Tua, but he's solid. He's throwing to a great group of receivers, the best in the country. But he's solid enough. Najee Harris played well. You know, they got big plays out of Devontae Smith in the first play of the game. Jerry Jeudy took one to the house from a long way. And they forced Michigan to kick field goals. But I mean, Michigan moved the ball on them. They just couldn't get touchdowns. And against Bama, that offense, you got to score touchdowns. And if you score 16 points, even with Mac Jones and those receivers, Bama's going to score, and they did, and kind of what I expected, frankly. I'm a little bit – it's sad that Tua wasn't played in this game.
Yeah, I agree.
You know what I mean? I mean, I'm a big fan of his. I think he's a great kid, great talent. And I know what Joe Burrow did this year and how great it was. But, man, as far as accuracy goes, Tua was so accurate for his career at Alabama, and he could just spin it. And I love watching a lefty play, too. You don't see lefties much anymore, and I dig watching a lefty. So that, to me, kind of stuck out. I saw him on the sideline supporting his teammates, and that's great. But at the same time, I wish he was out there his last game, because he'll be in the NFL next year.
Yep.
Bama signed this kid, this guy they got coming in next year, is supposed to be – all that in a bag of chips at quarterback. So it may not even be Mac Jones. Who knows?
What about Tua's little brother? Is he going to pan out?
Yeah, he's only. I don't think he's Tua talent. I think he's a little bit, a step or two back talent wise. But I think he'll be in the mix. But I kind of think it's going to be Mac Jones this freshman, if I had to guess. Next year.
And by the way, I think it's the right move for Tua. Go ahead and go to the pros. Yeah. Think about it, man. The last season and a half for Tua, he's kind of battled through some injury issues. There's no reason to risk maybe foregoing that paycheck altogether in the NFL. And I think he'll go first round still.
Yeah, I do too. I still see him. I still see him mocked in mock drafts to the Dolphins at six. And I guess that's based on the fact that if everything comes out of his surgery and everything's progressing fine, and it looks like he'll be 100% next year, he may go six. But I think Some say he's going to skip next year and kind of be kind of redshirted in the pros.
Right.
And if he went to a place like Miami, it'd be Fitzgerald or Fitzpatrick.
Yeah, Fitzmagic.
Is the guy for one more year and then have him come in the next year. But no, I believe Tua is too big of a talent not to make it to the next level. I really believe that. He's just does a lot of things really well.
I agree. And I've always liked Tua. I hate Alabama, and I hate a lot of things about Alabama, but I don't hate the individual players usually. And Tua, I actually always really liked watching him play for the same reasons that you
– classic guy.
Yeah, he's always – there was nothing about him that rubbed me the wrong way. And for a guy who has all the talent in the world, playing on the best team in the world, typically with the best coach in the world, he had every excuse to be kind of a jerk, and he never came across. So I was always big on
him. I don't know what it is, Greg, but what is it with – I've noticed this. The Islanders, like – I mean, Polynesian people, but especially when they come from like – if their ancestry comes from like – Samoa or what's the other island down there?
The French Polynesian and all that.
Yeah. Hey, where's Haku from?
He's
Tonga.
Tonga.
Tonga. Those people are such good people.
Yeah.
I don't know what it is, but they are like salt of the earth people, and they're extremely gifted athletically. So I guess, it's good that humble people are that good athletes, because their rate of NFL success compared to every other, ethnic group of people is incredible.
That's an interesting point. You wonder if it's work ethic, attitude, that's culturally.
I think
it's
all of the above.
Yeah.
I think there's something. It's athletic ability, plus I think their work ethic and humility. I just have a lot of respect for those people down there, man.
I don't know if you saw the clip of Tua when he was about to go into surgery. He was waiting for a little bit for, like, I guess the doctors to get ready or whatever, and they had him on the bed, and I think he had an IV in, and he was strumming a ukulele. I thought, that's about the most Hawaiian thing I can imagine. But it's also cool to see, like, you're about to go under the knife. What?
Did James Andrews do a surgery?
No, because I don't think James Andrews' specialty is hips.
Oh, he didn't do hips?
If you need an ACL or you need Tommy John's, he's the guy, but I don't know if he's the best for hips. But so now we got Bama at 11-2, which for Bama is somewhat of a disappointing season. Michigan 9-4, and Blake getting blown out in the bowl game as per usual, losing to Ohio State, not really even competing for their division in the Big 12. Seems like it's pretty typical for Michigan these days in Harbaugh. We'll see what happens with them.
Yeah, I mean, it's kind of par for the course for him, and I don't have any sympathy.
No, me neither. In fact, it's funny, Blake, we're only a couple years removed from reports that Michigan was considering a lifetime contract for Harbaugh. I wish they'd signed him, but apparently they wisened up. We'll see what happens moving forward.
Yeah.
All right, Blake, let's talk Outback Bowl, which your Chickens way back when won 2 in a row. I guess
that is the Chicken Invitational, baby.
I guess some sort of interesting claims to fame for South Carolina athletics is you guys won 2 Outback Bowls in a row over the same team, Ohio State, and you also won 3 NITs in a row.
Two NITs.
You won 2 World Series, College World Series in a row.
Yeah.
So that's funny. 2 Outback Bowls, 2 NITs.
Yeah, I think the oddest one's 2 NITs in a row.
Yes, that's not easy to do.
Because when you win the NIT, you make a jump.
Yeah, you're better. You're good enough
to make it. We went back to the same damn tournament and won it again. So, yeah, you'll figure that.
And then I think the next year after the second one that you guys won in a row, I want to say we played in the finals and we lost, because I thought that'd be hilarious. If you guys won the NIT twice in a row,
did you play?
I think it was West Virginia.
Yep, and y'all made the finals. I remember under Shiat.
That may have been Purnell's first year, actually, but it might have been Shiat.
No, I'm talking about way back in the day.
Oh.
Shiat had Barnes's players.
Oh, that would have been way back. Yeah.
And you made the NIT title game and lost. I can't think of who. I can't remember who you lost to, but I remember you made the NIT. It was a year because y'all won the tournament a couple years in a row, and then Barnes left, and Shiat was just not on Barnes' level as a coach.
No,
obviously, but he had enough talent to make the NIT championship game, and he lost. It was like when you had Tony Christie and all those guys, Jameson, Harold Jameson.
Was that pre Will Solomon? Was that Will Solomon days?
Been on that team too. Remember that y'all had those European players too?
It was
that time period, and so y'all made two NIT finals in a row for two, I think.
Yep, I think that sounds right. All right, so where are we going? We're going Outback Bowl.
Outback Bowl.
Outback Bowl, Minnesota, Auburn. Great game, actually.
Yes, it was.
Really, really good game. Let's see. You picked Auburn to win, but Minnesota with the cover. I picked Auburn to win and cover. The line was 7.5. You know, Blake, I get tired of picking Auburn because they always do the exact opposite of what I expect them to do.
Well, I'll say this, watching this game, I was fully convinced. And I'm not a big row the boat guy for some reason. I just get sick of hearing about that stupid row the boat thing. Right. I don't know. It's very annoying to me. But, and the fans do it. It's just, come on. And the kids they're dressed like them. I don't know. He's a good coach, but it just rubs me the wrong way, I guess. But I got to give him credit. He totally outcoached Gus Malzahn. That's what I've been watching this game thinking, man, row the boat is absolutely schooling Malzahn as far as coaching goes. That's what I thought when I saw it. Because they were ready. They were motivated. I'm sure Auburn was ready and motivated too. But there is something you could almost see on the field that they were a more prepared football team to me. I just thought that in Auburn, Gus Malzahn needs Chad Morris because I just don't like what he does on offense. It was kind of innovative 10 years ago, but the same sugar huddle.
Yeah.
It's okay, Gus. That's we've seen that in, I don't know. I think if you're an Auburn fan, you're glad you got Chad Morris coming to run the offense. I hope Malzahn gives him full control. In Minnesota, I mean, row the boat, as much as he annoys me sometimes, he's a heck of a coach.
Yeah, and I think, Blake, this – you say Auburn fans are glad Chad Morris is coming in. I don't know, because I'm not sure Auburn fans are happy with having Malzahn, period. I know, look, beating Alabama this year, even though it's not necessarily the same Alabama team we've seen the last few years, because of injuries and because of a little bit of attrition from the previous years, but – Malzahn, this game was a microcosm of Malzahn at Auburn. Confusing coaching decisions. Like you said, getting outcoached by, I wouldn't have thought row the boat would be on the same level of coaching acumen as Malzahn. I think one of the reasons he rubs you the wrong way is we both, I think, have that instinct to see him as a rah-rah guy, and neither one of us are really big fans of the rah-rah sort of guys. We're more the Gundy, Mike Leach sort of Steve Spurrier kind of personalities.
The guys personalities are the guys who are more X's and O's kind of guys.
Well, the guys that are more tell it like it is and less window dressing sort of guys.
I mean, the sunshine pumping, it's not for me.
Right,
I mean,
right.
It works, but it wears off,
yes,
usually.
Yes, and that's why, and to me, that's why I was surprised. I was like you. I thought that Malzahn got outcoached by Row the Boat. And what's the other one? Skiuma or whatever they say. There's a couple little phrases they say. But, and that's, I think, like I said, a microcosm of what we've seen at Auburn during Malzahn's tenure there. We see the ups and downs, Blake, not only season to season, but game to game we see those ups and downs. Mm-hmm. And we saw that this year, too. We saw the Alabama ups, and even against LSU, we saw a competitive game against LSU, and then against Minnesota, a team that they probably should have beat, mm-hmm. we saw them get outcoached mm-hmm. by Row the Boat. So if you're an Auburn fan, I sense your frustration. Maybe Chad Morris will come in, pick up some of the offensive slack, hopefully all of it, from Malzahn, take the reins there, get rid of the sugar huddle and stuff like that.
And also, Greg, Bo Nix, I don't think he's being coached up very well. I just don't think so. I mean, I know he's a freshman, and I'm not as wild about him as some other guys are. I mean, I think he won SEC Offensive Freshman of the Year. He's okay, but I don't know. I think he's one of those guys that's a 4-year player and will be solid but not great. But I don't think Gus has done him. I don't think Gus I thought Gus made Jarrett Stidham regress.
Yeah,
frankly, I
yeah.
wasn't. I mean, I'm just not a big. As far as the quarterback coach goes, if you're not like Cam Newton, which okay, there's not many Cam Newtons, but or Nick Marshall, Gus needs a true dual threat that's more of a runner to run his offense, I think. I don't think he does well with guys who are passers. I don't know. Maybe I'm wrong.
Well, and that's – and you know, enter Chad Morris. We do know that Chad Morris has that ability. We saw what he did with Taj Boyd. And actually, Blake, what he did with Taj Boyd is pretty impressive. Not that Taj Boyd's not a talented guy anyway, but I think it's safe to say that Chad Morris elevated Taj Boyd to about as good as he was going to be. By the way, a lot of this comes from – I'm fresh off of watching the replay of the Peach Bowl from a few years ago against LSU. And I watched the whole stinking thing the other day. Blake, by the way,
and seeing the game.
And well, and seeing Taj Boyd take all those hits, guy got abused that game and just kept coming back
well,
and making plays.
I gained a lot of respect for him after that game because he kept getting up and getting up and getting up. And that's, I mean, to me, I can not like your school, but I can see when a guy, let's just be frank, showed a ton of balls.
Yeah.
But when you get hit like he got hit in that game and kept getting up and then let him down the field to win the game on the last drive, what can you say but to give him credit? But yeah. I mean, Taj Boyd, whatever – I mean, Chad Morris came to Clemson, a light bulb went off. I mean, he that was just what – because he was nothing. I mean, I remember seeing him against South Carolina.
Yeah, he
was a
redshirt
freshman.
Yeah.
Yeah, and just didn't know what he was doing. You're like, this guy sucks. And I mean, or Chad Morris, he's all ACC. So, I mean
– now, granted –
hopefully that happens to Bo Nix.
He still never beat South Carolina, I'm sure you're aware. But at the same time, yeah.
I am. But we were – but I mean, look – we were a lot better back then, A. And B, Clemson never had the offensive line for him that they've had for the other guys. Period. Offensive line was not as good under Taj as it was for Watson, or even better now for Lawrence.
That's true.
In my opinion.
That's true.
I mean, the line was just kind of average, and we had a good defensive line. And if you're a quarterback, man, that's a bad combination. Now Clemson's offensive line is top 10 in the country, you know? So, okay, throw that in the mix with weapons on the outside and good running back and – you know, future first round, probably first overall pick a quarterback. You know, things are a little bit different now.
That's true.
No, Todd is a great quarterback.
And so hopefully if you're an Auburn fan, Chad Morris comes in, helps alleviate some of these issues that Auburn has.
So. Hopefully he'll get the most out of Bo Nix. That's what I hope.
Yeah, yeah, because I think Bo Nix, I think he's got potential.
I don't think he's a star guy, but I think he could be a solid 4-year starter.
Yeah, I think that's probably a good way of looking at it.
Yeah.
All right, Blake, let's go Sugar Bowl. New Orleans, this game was also New
what
Year's Day.
Paint dry. Oh,
yeah,
my God.
Yeah, it was kind of rough. I don't remember what else I was watching. I was flipping between this and something. It wasn't another game. Maybe I was just falling in and out of sleep. I don't know. 26-14 was the final score. Georgia ended up winning this game.
I was just bored in this game. I don't know if you were. I will say this about Georgia. That George Pickens is going to be a star receiver, I think. He is a gifted guy, but, man, their offensive scheme's boring. Poor old Fromm got so fed up, he's gone. And I think if he plays for a more QB-friendly system, he comes back. I swear I think part of him leaving is he's like, I don't want to play in this shit system.
Yeah, frankly. I agree. Yeah.
And they have nobody behind them because Justin Fields, he was supposed to be the next guy in line. He transfers out, does great things at Ohio State. I don't know who they're going to go to next year, Greg.
I don't either.
I don't know.
I don't either. Maybe they got some stud coming in. I don't know.
Even so, I don't care how good he is coming in, if they're going to put the reins on him and keep him handcuffed like they did with Fromm for a lot of his career – then I just don't know. I don't know about Georgia. I mean, we're talking just like last year, year before about Georgia's is really close to taking that next step to being an elite power. Now I'm starting to wonder if they're going to regress down to being an 8-9 win team.
Yep.
I just don't know about their coaching situation. I just don't know about Kirby Smart.
I'm not sold on the guy yet. And Blake, speaking of not being sold, I'm going to ask you a question. This may be a bit out there. I don't know. But we see this score 26-14. Now Georgia was a 7.5. Let's see, 7.5 point favorite. You actually picked Baylor with the upset, and even in our bowl pool, a lot of us picked Baylor to win outright.
Except you.
I did not. Yeah, I think I was the only one who did
that. You think everybody else picked Baylor to win? I thought they were playing for more. And in bowl games, that means a lot to me. Who's playing for more? And Baylor's a team. They're in the Sugar Bowl. Baylor, a team that won like one game 3 years ago or something. They're in the Sugar Bowl now. Georgia, I'm usually a playoff team. Then all of a sudden now, you know, they're sliding back and they got their butts kicked by LSU. How will they respond? I just kind of thought Baylor would respond better, but I was wrong.
Well, so my question is, Blake, is this related to maybe Matt Rhule, who, as we know, is now the coach of the Carolina Panthers, making big money, which I have sort of mixed feelings about that hire. I'm going to save my judgment. I'm going to let it play out a little bit before I, you know, cast judgment. Or is this an indictment on Big 12? As we saw Oklahoma, which we'll talk about shortly. Oklahoma goes to the Peach Bowl and gets absolutely spanked by LSU. Most people sort of predicted this. So is this an indictment on the Big 12 in some way? Because you got to think, Oklahoma got absolutely spanked by LSU, and Baylor came very close to beating Oklahoma not once but twice. So is this as much of a...
down. Big 12's down.
Yeah.
Down.
Yeah.
And part of the problem is, in the Big 12, I think, Texas is not what they used to be. Now, Texas won their bowl game, but Texas was 7-5. You know, Kansas State just got a new coach. They used to be a pretty good team in that conference. I'm going to tell you another team. TCU's kind of fallen. Remember, they were for a while, they were a really good team. They slid back to being kind of an average bowl-type team.
Right.
They used to be... Heck, I mean, we had TCU and Baylor both with chances to make the playoff, because to show you how crazy it was 5 or 6 years ago.
That's right.
Yes, it's definitely down because I don't know what their bowl record. I think their bowl record. I think the only team to win a bowl game was Texas in the Big 12. Am I right?
That sounds right. Yeah, I'll have to go back and check.
Kansas
that
State
sounds right.
Lost to Navy. Oklahoma State lost to A&M. Oklahoma lost to LSU.
Baylor lost to Georgia.
Yeah, did TCU did they lose their bowl game?
I'm looking. Let's see.
I think they did.
Who'd they play? Do you remember?
No, remember.
too many bowls, man. Let's see. I don't like. Were they in a bowl?
Were they not?
I don't know.
Maybe they didn't make a bowl.
I don't know. But, yes, it hasn't been a good year for the Big 12 in bowls, even with or without TCU, I think. Yeah, man,
no.
I don't know that they were in a bowl.
They may have not been.
Man, I don't see them. I'm scrolling through all of them. I don't see them. I may have missed them, but I don't know that they made a bowl this year. Which that says something, too, you know?
Yeah, it does. Absolutely does.
So sort of a Georgia team that's awfully talented, as we know, but with an archaic offense, maybe not much motivation against a Baylor team, which, by the way, that's a good location for a big game for Baylor, the Sugar Bowl.
Yes.
Baylor doesn't have many alums relative to some of these other bigger schools, but the ones that can make it probably did to this game. And the same thing with Georgia fans too. But you said, they had all the motivation in the world, still couldn't get it done. And yeah, it's a boring game, boring way to lose. Unfortunately,
yeah, I was
for Baylor.
Very bored, frankly.
Speaking of boring, let's go ahead and move. We can talk about this real quick, Blake. The Birmingham Bowl. First of all, it's a boring name. It's in a boring city, and it was a boring game. Final score of this game: Cincinnati, Boston College. Cincinnati ended up winning 38-6. This is another one that we both picked against the spread correctly. Cincinnati was a 7-point favorite. We know that Boston College is just an okay team. We know that they were without their coach who got fired.
Yep.
And according to our resident Boston College fan, that the new hire is a good guy, Charlie. According to Charlie, the new hire is a good one in his opinion. But he was not coaching this game, nor should he have been. And Cincinnati just ended up walking the dog on Boston College.
I think Luke Fickell is actually a star in the making for Cincinnati. I think he's I think his next move will be to a Power 5 conference, most likely the Big Ten. But we'll see what happens.
By the way, Blake, Boston College total offense right around 165.
Oof.
Total. Meanwhile, Cincinnati had 343 yards on the ground. So, yeah, it's a not a good showing for Boston College, but I can't.
I mean, BC really was this year. I mean, they were just average at best average. You know, they couldn't find any consistency. They even lost on Red Bandana night, you know.
Well, it was so. Red Bandana Day. That doesn't help.
That's true. Red Bandana Day. So, I mean, this is not your typical BC team.
Fair enough. Anything else we can say?
Nah.
Sunnier days are ahead, I think, for BC.
I would think so.
Let's talk the Tax Slayer Bowl in Jacksonville, Tennessee, and Indiana. Man, you got to hand it to Vegas for this one, Blake. Tennessee's a 1.5-point favorite, and they win by one. 23 to 22. Well done, Vegas. well done indeed. 23 to 22 is the final score. By the way, Blake, this game was 19 to 9 Indiana going into the fourth quarter. Tennessee scores 14 points against Indiana's 3 in the fourth quarter to come away with a win.
I think it was 22-9 with like 9 minutes to go.
It was. Guantanamo, not the best game, but good enough. 18 for 31, 221 yards, no touchdowns, 2 picks. So not a great way to end his career at Tennessee. He's a senior.
Is he done?
I think he's done.
I thought he was a redshirt junior.
He may be a redshirt junior. He may have one more year at Tennessee, actually, now that I think about it. But nevertheless, not a good way to end the season, I guess we'll say. But nevertheless, it is a good way to end it when you come away with a win. Blake, did you watch any of the Gator Bowl?
Some, and I didn't finish it, I'll be honest. I didn't, so I missed the ending.
I missed most of this game, actually. I don't know what I was doing, but I only caught little bits and pieces of it. But nevertheless,
was this after New Year's?
This was the January 2nd. This was the 7 p.m.
Okay. Yeah, I didn't watch much of it.
So I don't know. I don't know how much we can say about this. Tennessee, we've talked about them.
Tennessee, look, I get Tennessee credit. They caught fire in the season, and this team will start off really bad. End up going to a pretty good bowl and winning. So I have to give Pruitt a lot of credit for turning that season around.
Would they win, Blake? Seven of their last eight, including the bowl? That is incredible. That is incredible.
Yeah. I mean, this is a team that was dead in the water, I thought, you know, and they turn it around. So you have to give Pruitt a lot of credit.
Absolutely. And that gives them a lot of good vibes, good momentum going forward in a league that next year, as you mentioned, probably won't be so dominated by Georgia. You got Tennessee up and coming. You got Florida up and coming. Georgia is going to regress a little bit, we think. It's going to be interesting to see what happens in the East next year.
Happens.
All right, Blake, let's talk. Let's go back in time a little bit to the playoff games, starting with the Peach Bowl in Atlanta, of course, Oklahoma-LSU. LSU was a 13-point favorite. We both picked LSU to win outright. We both picked Oklahoma to cover those 13 points.
Yeah.
I'll say what my line of thinking was, Blake. I had heard that, well, first of all, I'd seen Oklahoma put up points against everybody they'd played, and I knew LSU was probably better. But at the same time, I thought, this is going to be a little bit of a shootout, even though LSU has more. And also, Edwards-Helaire was not 100%.
Yep.
In fact, some indications showed he might not play at all. I thought, man, that's enough for me to take Oklahoma the points. Blake, final score 63-28. And by the way, Edwards-Helaire had two carries.
Way worse, by the way.
Yes.
Was it at halftime? Was it 49-14 at half? Did they have 49 in the first half?
They had, 49-14 at half. And
I mean, they could have named their score in this game, and Oklahoma had no answer for what they were doing.
Right. And Joe Burrow, I believe, had seven touchdown throws in the first half?
Yes, sir.
Seven in the first half. And I felt really bad for Jalen Hurts because the problem is, Blake, even though Oklahoma's got a prolific offense, the problem is, once at the end of the first quarter, it's 21-7, and now your game plan has to change if you're Oklahoma. And Jalen Hurts he's just never been the kind of guy who can sling it all over the field. That's been part of the problem. That's part of the reason why he landed at Oklahoma rather than staying at Alabama, because Tua could, and he couldn't. Jalen Hurts tries to sling it around the field, just can't do it. He's a great quarterback. He fits a lot of schools really well, a lot of teams really well, but he's not the kind of guy you want when you're down 14 against a team that you know is going to score the next time they get the ball.
Yep.
He ended up 15-31, 217 yards, no touchdowns, 1 pick. Had some success running the ball, but not enough through the air or running the ball and really make a dent in this game. LSU just runs away with it. I'll say this, Blake. We talked about this. We both picked LSU to win fairly easily, despite the 13-point spread.
Mm-hmm.
And we both said LSU, if things play out the way that we think they will, and they did, even more so than we thought they would, LSU has the advantage moving forward because we expected the Fiesta Bowl to be more of a bloodbath. And LSU absolutely got a nice little, you know, layup game, so to speak, coming into the national championship game. And we expected that to happen, but we didn't expect it maybe to this extent.
Yeah.
Anything else that we can say about this game? I don't know how much we can break down.
I don't think it matters as much because of the longer layoff.
Maybe
next
not.
Week, I think it'd be a big deal.
Right.
With it being, you know, what we talk about, 16, 17 days?
Right.
I don't know how much of an edge that is now.
And actually, oddly enough, Blake, it sort of worked out where LSU didn't really have to use Edwards-Helaire, so he also had the time to heal, too.
Yeah, they really lucked out there. Yeah. So you think he'll be even healthier for this game. And they will need him, I think, the next game. I don't think they can do it without him. And, the backups, was it Davis Price and John Emery? Those are good players. But Edwards-Helaire is kind of I think he's a straw that stirs a drink. I say that. Against Oklahoma, it didn't matter because they had – Chase and Jefferson and Marshall and Randy Moss's son, Thaddeus Moss. I mean, you know, they have a lot of weapons, but Edwards-Helaire is a straw that stirs a drink, in my opinion.
Well, it's hard to say that Burrow's not, but I know what you mean. Edwards-Helaire.
Well, but I mean, I'm sorry. Other than Joe Burrow.
Yeah, yeah.
He's the next guy, I think.
And also, I think
the second most important player.
I think Edwards-Helaire is underrated for what he does in pass protection as well.
In pass pro and receiving.
Yes. And LSU didn't need that against Oklahoma. So I think they'll definitely need that against Clemson. Blake, is there anything else we can say about the Peach Bowl, or should we move to Fiesta?
Look, LSU just, they're a machine right now, you know?
Yes, they are. So let's talk Fiesta Bowl in Glendale, as we know. Later on that day on the 28th, this is the 8 p.m. game, Clemson, Ohio State. Clemson was a 2-point favorite. Ended up winning this game 29-23. And, Blake, what a bizarre game for a lot of different reasons. This was a game it's funny, Blake, because I've mentioned this before with the national championship game last year about how it actually wasn't as lopsided as the score indicated. And I've said before, Blake, I think you take those two teams, Clemson and Alabama last year, you put them together 10 times, I think Clemson wins maybe 6 of those games. This is a game, Blake, where Clemson and Ohio State play 10 times. Clemson might win 3, maybe 4.
Yeah, I kind of agree with that.
But this was I was fascinated not only with the ease at which Ohio State was able to move the ball early, but also with the way Clemson turned it around. And granted, there were some lucky breaks, as we know. But I don't know. I'm going to let you talk about it first, and then I'll give you my ideas.
Well, yeah, Ohio State, they came ready to play, and I thought they outplayed Clemson, frankly. They just didn't – they had some bad breaks, and they also didn't capitalize. I thought it was a problem when they were in the red zone that many times only, you know, and kept getting field goals. You have to get touchdowns at some point. Dobbins really – and look, as great as Dobbins played, Dobbins should have had 2 more touchdowns, and – he dropped a screen pass, which if he doesn't score, he gets really close.
Yep.
And then, of course, the touchdown catch where he dove and just couldn't hang on the ball. And he should have caught that ball.
It was sort of weird how it slipped out of his hands, actually. It didn't make any sense.
Yeah, because he had it. And I've always thought, you know, when you dive and you catch it, you turn over. I mean, that's just what
– he landed on it.
He didn't. He landed on it. And he lost when he landed on it. I mean, so – and it wasn't a catch because you have to finish the catch. I think some of those finish the catch rules are ridiculous, but that one wasn't. He didn't catch it. But the key to the game, I mean, there are a couple of keys, but what really started the key was when Lawrence got popped and the targeting call happened. That took a lot of wind out of their sails because not only was it a 15 yards on the first down, you stopped him on third down, but the safety's ejected.
Yep.
Their best safety, by the way. And Clemson started taking advantage of things. Lawrence uses legs a lot more than I thought he would. I think because they were Ohio State was really focused on ETN not hurting him, it seemed like to me.
Right.
Now, he hurt him in the passing game, but not in the run game, really. He didn't hurt him in the run game, but the passing game he did. But of course, you know, the big play with the Ross fumble, that was, look, I don't care what the rule. Okay, first the targeting. By letter of the law, that was targeting. Okay, it was. Now, if you don't like the rule, I hear you. Because they said, because I was reading Ohio State fans say, well, he ducked his head when he got hit, and that's why, you know, I mean, okay, that's true. But he still lowered his head and did not hit him. He lowered his head to make contact.
Right.
And even if he hit him in the chest, I think they throw the flag on that. And even if he hits him with his head up, I think they throw the flag too, because they say any forcible contact above the head and neck area, that area, even with the face mask up, I think they still throw that flag. I hate the rule. I think it's ridiculous. I guess the problem I have is you got this kid for Ohio State. It was a bang-bang play. He gets ejected. And the guy for Oklahoma just pops Edwards a layer for no reason. I don't know if you saw that play.
I did, yeah.
Instead of trying to tackle Burrow, he just hits Edwards a layer.
Yeah, yeah.
And he gets the same penalty for something egregious. And the Ohio State guy gets a targeting penalty and gets ejected. The exact same penalty and cost, I mean, to his team, he's ejected for a bang-bang play. Mm. That, you know, so I think the rules need to change as far as ejections go. Ah. I think if it's a egregious play, should be ejected, but for that play, just 15 yards, no ejection.
I agree. That ejection was big. I actually do agree. And I'll say this, Blake. When I saw that play live, I did not – targeting never came to my mind, actually, because mm-hmm. he came – I mean, Blake, look, Lawrence didn't notice him. He had a free shot on Lawrence, and it didn't look egregious to me. It didn't look like he launched. I'm very sensitive to that, too, where I'm like, where if the quarterback or if whoever the ball carrier is, if they lower themselves – even if it's by letter of the law, like I would tend to look the other way because I just think that makes it almost impossible to be a defender. But one thing that was comforting to me, and at least accepting that penalty personally, was when they, before they'd even thrown the flag, the announcers Herb Street and Fowler, they went to their rule expert, which I always hate that. But the guy said, you know, mm-hmm. I think this is going to be targeting because look, he lowers his head here. And even though Lawrence lowered himself to kind of brace for the hit, he led with the crown of his helmet. I think they're going to go back and say this is targeting. And I thought, all right, well, it's one thing if they call it and then the rule guy always agrees with whatever the call is. I don't know if you've ever noticed that or not. They're like, I don't know if you ever noticed this with police officers. Police officers always agree with what other police officers do. They never, and doctors too.
Yeah, it's like a fraternity.
Yeah, yeah, it is. Doctors will never say all that. That guy's a quack. They never do that. Mm-hmm. And it's kind of the same thing where anytime something's called, this rule expert, whoever this guy is always like, that's the right call. And inevitably, almost.
It's worse in the NFL though.
Oh, it's way worse. But anyway, but the fact that he did it before there was actually anything thrown, I thought, okay, well, I guess that probably means it's legit. I don't like the guy getting thrown out for it. I'm like you.
That was my issue.
I think that's over the top. And also, like you said, it totally changed the momentum of the game. Blake, that was a third and long, I believe. Third and like 11 or something.
Yeah, which, he lost. I mean, so it was like fourth and 20.
Right, right. And so field position.
And Ohio State had dominated at that point in time.
Yes. At that point, Blake, I want to say was that 16-0 or 13-0, one or the other, and that would have pushed us back to like our own 10, punting from our own 10 and playing defense against a team we stopped in the end zone, but otherwise haven't really stopped them. But instead we use that, we go down the field, score a touchdown, and then hold them to a 3-and-out the next play, and then the next series, that's when Lawrence has the long 65-yard run, whatever, to score that touchdown. And at that point, totally different game. You know.
Yeah, it absolutely was. And then, of course, Lawrence is one of those guys, man. When he gets that 6'6 frame going,
long stride. Yeah.
And he's hard to catch up to because he's got those long strides, you know. You get those guys who are that tall, and if they are athletic enough to get out there and move and run, they can be tough to track down, especially if you underestimate them. And I think Ohio State was like, whoa, hang on, wait, you know, they couldn't catch him. But Lawrence actually played really well. But you know, also the Ross fumble slash incompletion. Look, I don't care what the rule is. That's a fumble, period. He fumbled that ball.
I'll say this, Blake. All right, so I'm going to compare this to another play that happened. So you mentioned this. You mentioned the Dobbins drop in the end zone, right? Live. When that happened live, I stood up and yelled, and I said, he dropped that. He didn't catch that. Go back and review it.
I thought the same thing.
Well, it was funny because the announcers didn't notice it until, like, the third or fourth replay. They're like, oh, hang on. Yeah. Wait a minute. Wait a minute. They may take a look. Yeah. And I'm like, you guys got to look at this. He didn't catch this ball. He dropped it going down. And then when I saw the Ross catch and fumble, incomplete, whatever you want to call it, I said the same thing. I said, that's coming back. He didn't catch that. When I watched it live and when I watched the replay, I said, oh, crap. I said, he did catch that. Mm-hmm. What? I'll go back to this. Blake, I have to like the call because it ended up being in our favor.
Sure.
And a very important call. But one thing that helps me accept myself liking that call is sort of the same thing with the rules official. He came on and said, they're going to call this an incomplete pass, and I'm going to tell you why. Because we see it in slow motion. And
yeah, but you know what? Bull crap.
That's fine. I agree, but at least they're consistent when he says this is what they're going to do and this is why they're going to do it. I don't agree with it.
The slow motion thing is the steps. I don't care about that. And I know he said that. And yes, bang bang play. Justin Ross has hands like his hands are sticky finger. He does not drop passes. He clearly caught the ball, made a football move, and he took four steps. And the ball got popped out.
Yep.
That's a catch.
Yep.
Now,
let me ask you: when you saw it live, what did you think?
I didn't know. I said it's close. I didn't say it was a catch. I said that's close.
Now it might have been wishful thinking on my part, but I didn't think it was any way. I thought that's incomplete. He didn't have to make a football move.
It's close, but at the same time, you know, you're like, well, I wasn't sure either way.
It was also fast, and if you remember the angle. The camera, the ball was on the other side of him from where the camera was. So you couldn't really see how long he actually had it and all that. But when I saw it live, I thought, nah, that's coming back. I was like, Ohio State, you can celebrate all you want. That's coming back. And then I saw the replay and I said, oh, hell. I don't know about that. And the rule guy came on and he said, nah, they're going to say this is incomplete because of blah, blah, blah. And I said, nah, they're not. No, they're not going to. And by God, they did. So.
Yeah, that's another one. If that's an incomplete pass, another rule's got to change. I'm sorry. I mean, if that's the letter of the law and a rule that's an incomplete pass, that's stupid. I've seen the pros, like the Dez Bryant catch against Green Bay. They call that incomplete, and it was a catch.
Right.
And Calvin Johnson, one of the worst ones ever, he called a touchdown pass. And on the way to the ground, he took, like, four steps. And on the way to the ground, he had the ball in one hand, and it slipped out, and they said he didn't complete the catch. I remember that.
Yeah, I agree.
Just use common sense. And maybe the worst was a Pittsburgh tight end against New England, where he made a football move. But anyway, it was a catch. I mean, Clemson got a break. Bad luck. It was just bad luck if you're an Ohio State fan. But Ohio State had chances in this game, and when they had a chance – look, I mean, Gray, they should have been up 24-0, not 16-0.
Yep.
If they would have executed, didn't execute, left Clemson in the game. Clemson comes back, and of course, the last play of the game. Well, of course, that drive Clemson had when they were down was a great drive. Ohio State, though, I was like, why would you?
What are you doing? Yeah. What?
They went back and prevent, man, and Lawrence just ate them up. But I will say that last play for the touchdown was a sweet play. The fake run.
I was calling for that. I was not at that moment, but
wide open.
But Blake, once I saw Lawrence break that 60-something yarder, I said, you know what? At some point in this game, I actually told my wife, she won't remember, but I told her this. I said, at some point in this game, I said, we're going to fake a quarterback sneak or quarterback keeper, and he's just going to step back. I don't know if you remember that Woody Dantzler play against NC State where he did that, he faked the sneak and then stepped back and just threw it over the middle. Guy was wide open. I said, at some point, that's going to be wide open. I don't know when it's going to be, and I was really happy to be able to use it. But
plus, he's the right guy, too, because – you know, watching Clemson play, the guy you fear in space is Travis Etienne.
Yes.
That's the guy you fear in space.
And we finally got him in space because we couldn't.
Yeah.
Ohio State did a great job of not allowing him to be in space.
But, I mean, when he ran the ball, but you finally get the ball in the air, and that's what you got to do. If he can't find space on the ground, it's like Spiller. And I'm not saying he's Spiller, but he's not far behind Spiller. But Spiller, you know, you get Spiller, if he can't, it'd be if they're clogging the running lanes, then get Spiller on wheel routes. Get him out, you know, get him in the slot. I mean, do things with him. That's, you know, ETN's the same way. I mean, if you got a guy that's got that much speed and quickness, who's a threat when he catches the ball or touches the ball at any time in the open field, you give him the ball in the open field, and you did, and it worked. Of course, the last play of the game, I felt really bad because here's the thing. That kid, number 70 for Iowa State, he made the right move. That mm-hmm. was – if Fields throws a corner out, it's wide open.
Yep.
But if Fields thought he was running just in you know, where he was running, it would have been a 50-50 ball with him Turner.
Yeah.
For Clemson.
Right. I went back and watched that a few times, and I wondered, hey, if he continues that route, does Turner still have the angle? Is Turner still able to intercept that? And I don't know.
I think it's a fight for the ball. Does he catch it? Just depends on if he gets inside position. But Turner was in the right place. I think Turner could have knocked it away. I don't think he picks it off. But I think he could have knocked it away. But if he completes that corner route, it's wide open. There's nobody over there.
Nobody.
And
right.
he also missed Dobbins wide open in the flat in that play too. Because when you play Clemson brings a lot of blitzes. I mean, and they brought a ton in this game. They love to blitz linebackers, and they'll blitz them and they'll drop them. You know, it's a really good system you run, but. But, you know, when you do that, Greg, you have times when you blow coverages. It just happens.
Yeah.
And Fields didn't see that because Dobbins was – I mean, I don't think he scores, but he gets about 15, 20 yards. And he's wide open in the flat, and instead he takes a shot at the end zone, which if he runs – if he continues that route, it's still – he has a shot to make the catch. But then again, this kid they were throwing the ball to, he's not one of those 6'4", 6'5 guys. I think he's like 6 foot, 5'11". So it'd be harder for him to get a jump ball than a bigger receiver. But, you know, he runs the wrong way. And, of course, Dabo Swinney told him he's going to pick it off because he's Jesus, I guess. which is that guy, man. Greg, he's done some great things for me. I realize he's done an incredible job, but I just can't imagine, you know, usually this, if you have a coach that makes these stupid t-shirts and does all this stuff, it wears off. It ain't worn off at all. You know, usually that wears off after a while. It's not sustainable because the hokey stuff doesn't work for unless you have a really good staff around, which he does. He has a great staff around him and he has great coordinators, especially on defense. I think Venables is the best in the business. I think it's his best job this year because I don't think he's dealing with as much talent
right.
as he has in the past. And he's really, these guys are playing great. But, God, Dabo Swinney, man. Jeez.
Yeah, I know you're a big fan. I know.
Yeah. And I'm sitting there like, you know, I have nothing against Trevor Lawrence. I have nothing against your players, but God, that guy, man. And then I heard him say, geez, man, it's cringeworthy. Was he quoting Philippians 4:13, and it was the fourth Clemson national championship game, and it's the 13th, the days of 13.
Now, did he say that, or did somebody else make that connection? Was that him?
I thought it was him who said that.
I didn't hear it, but it might have been.
He said he told him he was going to pick the ball off, and, you know, if you go back out there. I think when they scored the previous time, it was Turner in coverage. He said, don't worry, kid. Next time you're going to pick the ball off, and your dad's going to be looking down. And, look, his dad's story is a great story. I don't know if you've seen that story.
Yes,
Great story. I'll give him that. Kevin Turner was a great player, and he got him ALS. It was really sad. And him and Dabo were buddies at Alabama. And he offered him a scholarship. I think his last scholarship, I think he had a scholarship that he didn't expect, and he gave it to Turner, right? Is that something like that?
Yeah, I think that's it.
And it's a great story. I mean, it's Turner kid. I'm nothing against his kid. He's a great kid. But don't. How many other times did he say he's going to pick a ball off and he didn't do it? You know what I mean?
Never. Never, boy. Yeah. Every time.
Oh my God, that guy, man.
I'll say this, Blake, in a lot of ways, and this is going to sound crazy, in a lot of ways, this game reminded me of the national championship game last year. And I know that doesn't make a lot of sense, but the difference to me was, because I don't know if you remember, but But Blake, Alabama.
Oh, it does because he held them to field goals. In the
red zone. that's one of them, right? All right, so we held them to field goals. We also forced Tua. We got him to throw a couple of picks, and he never threw picks. Same thing with
one
Fields.
Was a pick six, right?
One was a pick six. And actually, Blake, by the way, one thing that a lot of people don't talk about is we had a pick six called back on a very, very questionable offensive or defensive holding call. I don't know if you remember that.
Yeah, who picked it off?
I don't think it was Simmons. It might have been Simmons. He wasn't the one. Whoever picked it off was not the one that was called for the hold. It was somewhere else. But where? Look, it was probably a hold, but it was one of those that could go either way. A guy grabbed his jersey and let go, you know, where you're like, you could call that.
Yeah.
People don't talk about that. But anyway, Blake.
Yeah.
We were being outplayed early, and people don't remember that about the Alabama game last year either. We were outplayed early, and Alabama made a mistake and also couldn't put the ball in the end zone, even though they moved the ball down the field with ease, couldn't get the ball quite in the end zone, and Clemson capitalized. And by the way, Clemson didn't make any mistakes. We didn't have any turnovers. We didn't have any picks, no fumbles, nothing. And that's really tough to do, but that's also what we did against Alabama. So we capitalized on Ohio State's mistakes. We forced them into field goals when they should have been touchdowns. We got a little bit lucky, and we didn't make any mistakes. Now, you can't do that every game, I don't think, but we did it this game.
Well, look, if you play LSU and you don't have any turnovers and you hold them to field goals, you're going to win.
Yeah, that's a easier said than done, holding them to field goals. But yeah, so speaking of which.
Yeah, it is, but yeah.
Speaking of which, let's...
I'll ask you one more question.
Sure.
What happened to T. Higgins?
That, I don't know. That's sort of the freak thing.
I don't understand what happened. I'm watching that play. I'm like, I didn't see him hit his head.
Well, he sort of did, but it didn't look like he'd be bad enough to.
And he goes out, and he's just standing. And all of a sudden, he's back in uniform. I'm like, okay, now what happened?
But largely ineffectual. Yeah, it didn't really do much.
Did Mr. Miyagi do the hand thing on his head? You know what I mean?
Dabo read some Bible verses to him during halftime. Yeah, because that was interesting.
He did. I don't know, but it looked miraculous to me.
Because Higgins, they said, "Oh, he's out. He's out for the game." And then
all of a sudden he's out there playing. I'm like,
right.
Wait, is that number five?
I was hoping Blake he'd come down like Sting from the rafters, you know, second half.
Look, I mean, Higgins is a great player. I don't know. He's a great player, but
we need him healthy. Yes.
Oh yeah. I mean, look, you need to play your A game, and you know.
All right, so let's talk about the national championship game, which, as we know, in New Orleans on Monday night. Why it's on Monday night, God only knows. So Dabo can tell you, I'm sure, but that's about it. Maybe Joel Osteen
too. Dabo to talk to the Lord and have him move it to Friday.
Yeah. So it's a 5.5-point spread LSU's way. Blake, tell me what you think is going to happen. Give me your keys to the game. I'm curious.
What's going to happen? Who knows after the Clemson Ohio State game? God, I mean, that's. I think it's going to come down. I mean, look, and it's always cliche, like, oh, it's going to come in turnovers. And, of course, that's big. But
right.
I kind of think it's going to come down to which can either defensive line establish themselves in this game. Because Clemson's defensive line's down off last year's team. LSU's defensive line's kind of down off what they have been, too.
I'm going to say something real quick that actually I meant to say when we were talking about the Peach Bowl. I was impressed with LSU's D-line in that game because they were in Jalen Hurts' face all game long. I don't know if that has more to do with Oklahoma's poor protection or if that has to do with maybe LSU kicking in the extra gear. I don't know.
I think it's Oklahoma's poor protection because LSU's defensive line this year has not been that consistent. So it lends me to believe that – I mean, look, that Chase on number 18 is a good pass rusher, but he's a one-trick pony. I don't think he's kind of skinny. He's like 6'5", 240. In the running game, he's not that good, you know, defending the run because of his size. Because I think Clemson's left tackle is like 330 or something. So, I mean, that's, you know, it could be a mismatch in the running game for Clemson. But, no, it's I think a lot's going to be, you know, defensive line. Can either defensive line play better than they have been playing? I think both offensive lines are pretty good. But I see a lot of similarities. I mean – you know, ETN needs a big game, but so does Edwards-Helaire. I mean, even the receivers. You got Ross, you got Higgins, and you got for LSU, you got Jefferson, you got Chase, and you got Marshall. And then you got Moss at tight end, and you got for Clemson, you got Rodgers in the slot can make some plays every now and then. Mm-hmm. And, you know, And yeah, I think both teams on defense, their strength is their back four.
Yeah, I agree.
Think Clemson.
And I think LSU is a little better.
And also, Simmons needs to play safety, not linebacker in this game. They need him a safety.
He is. Because, he is playing safety.
Well, and they need to bump up Muse to linebacker because Simmons at linebacker, and I'm sure they'll move him around some, he needs to play more safety because at linebacker, you can kind of waste what he does, I think. Because Clemson needs to – I mean, they need to prevent LSU from actually going over the top in this game
right.
and beating them with plays. Simmons on the back end helps that big time, in my opinion. Because if you have Simmons playing linebacker, all of a sudden you got Muse back there. Muse in coverage is very iffy. And he's having a hard time sticking with either Jefferson or Chase or Marshall, whoever. And of course, LSU's back four with Delpit, Stingley. Is it Grant, the other corner who's really good?
Yeah.
Is it Grant?
I think so.
But Stingley's, I think he's a future top five pick. I think he's fantastic as a freshman. And I think Delpit's the best safety in football. I almost think, Greg, whichever team's front seven plays better might be the winner in this game. That's a weird thing to say, but I think that, to me, can Michael Divinity make an impact coming back for LSU? Can Phillips for LSU make an impact and chase on? For Clemson, can Skalski and who's number 35? Good player.
I was watching him today because I was watching the replay of the Fiesta Bowl. And I was saying the same thing. He made some really great tackles.
He is your best pass rusher, I think, 35. If 35 can play well, can he play well? Can you do well? I mean, I think it's almost a battle of the front sevens in a lot of ways. Because I think Lawrence will play well, and I think Burrow will play well. But I just Lawrence, his legs are going to be key in this game, I would think. I would think they're going to be key because they need his legs. I mean, you need Lawrence's legs because he's obviously got it. Maybe Burrow's legs, too. It's another thing, too, Greg. Burrow's he's a lot more athletic than you would think.
Right.
Like Lawrence, he's pretty athletic.
He is.
So can Burrow make some plays with his legs? It's going to be interesting. I don't know which way to lean. I think LSU's better. But not by much. And also, Clemson tends to play in these games. They tend to rise to the occasion. And, hey, what's the spread?
LSU's favored by 5.5.
I think I'm going to take LSU to win the game, but Clemson to cover. I like this to be a very entertaining game. Yeah, give me LSU 38-35.
All right, LSU 38-35. All right, so I'm going to tell you what I think – the keys to the game are. For one, you mentioned Lawrence using his legs. Also, we know ETN. We have to establish some sort of ground game.
Or ETN on swing passes is fine too.
I'm fine with that as well. We tried using ETN, tried putting him up the middle. You know, it didn't really work against Ohio State. We found ways to use him. What I hope is that we don't spend a lot of time wasting time with things that don't work before we finally figure out what does, because we did that against Ohio State, actually on both sides of the ball. We had to make adjustments. We didn't come out with the right game plan on either side of the ball. I hope we don't do that this time around. Blake, for me, I think we can put up points against LSU. I say that. I think we can move the ball. And, of course, you mentioned, it all comes down to turnovers, and that goes without saying, so we don't even need to bother saying that. Provided we can avoid turning the ball over, I think we can move the ball on LSU. They do have a great back four, as we know. Their front seven, a little bit softer, right? We can probably do some things against them. And in our case, Blake, I think stopping Joe Burrow is very difficult to do. What we need to do is get him to make a mistake a la Tua in the national championship game, a la Fields in the Fiesta Bowl. We need to get him to make a mistake or two, get him rattled a little bit. But I have a different idea.
If he does against Oklahoma, he almost threw a couple pick sixes.
He did.
In that first half. He was lucky. He was lucky a couple times.
I have a different idea about how to do that. One thing that I've noticed about Oklahoma or LSU, what they've done this year so far, especially the last few games, is Joe Burrow starting out will get rid of the ball really quick. He'll zip these quick, just incredibly accurate balls, a lot of them over the middle, a lot of them screen passes, a lot of them little button routes, little slants, these little kind of easy pitch and catch where, Blake, you don't have a chance to get to him. He gets the ball out in a second and a half. Doesn't matter if you're bringing blitz or not. And most of the time, these guys are wide open, and his receivers are so good, they can take a five-yard pass and turn it into a 15, 20-yard gain. So then, from there, you've got that, which almost always seems to work. Or maybe you don't. Maybe it only gets 5 yards, or maybe it gets a little bit more. And then you've also got Edwards-Helaire, who can move the ball on the ground. And then what happens is you start playing the middle of the field, and that's when Joe Burrow stretches you over the top. That's when he stretches you long and hits you deep, some of these deep balls to their great receivers. Blake, what I would do is I would do the opposite of what Venables typically does. If not, for no other reason, just to surprise Ed Orgeron and company, I would line up linebackers on or close to the line of scrimmage almost every single play, and most of the time have those guys drop back, at least early.
Yeah.
I would goad him. I would goad Burrow into thinking pressure's coming, got to get rid of this ball, and the guys come back into coverage. Maybe you pick them off. Maybe you bat down some passes. Maybe every once in a while you bring one of those. One of those guys actually does follow through with the blitz. And then later on you can sort of adjust based on what he's done. But what you can't do is get him confident in those little intermediary throws where guys turn into big plays and you allow him to stretch the field, because he'll eat you up all day. Yep. I think a lot of people would say, oh, the thing to do is you got to be in his face all night. I think Burrow's too smart for that, for the most part. Unless you can get a few good hits on him and rattle him, or you can get him in a position where he's got to come from behind. Maybe that's a different story, but I think you got to play him a little bit differently than maybe Venables is used to playing. I'm curious what you think.
Oh yeah. Yeah. I agree with that. I think Venables will take some chances, but I think what he's going to do is try to confuse Burrow with zone blitzing. Like you say, linebackers, like they fake blitz and they drop in coverage.
Yeah.
And also what that does too, is it not just they drop in coverage, it confuses them, but also offensive linemen can be confused by that. All of a sudden, they're going to pick up a blitzing linebacker. Oh, by the way, he didn't blitz, but we got what? Defensive linemen running free now. Those things can happen. So I think you'll see a lot of that. The one thing I think Clemson's linebackers are vulnerable in the passing game. They're not as athletic as they have been. Like, you don't have the Stephon Anthony's and the
Bullwares.
No, Bullware. He's kind of he actually fit in well in this defense, but just guys that are mismatches. I think you see Clemson play more zone this game.
Yeah.
I think you'll see some man, but a lot of zone, because I think if you try to play man, what Joe Brady and LSU does is they like to find mismatches. And if you get a linebacker on Edwards-Helaire or get a linebacker isolated on like a slot receiver like Marshall or Dillon or somebody like that, it can be a mismatch. And I think that you'll see Venables try to confuse Burrow. But that's what he tries to do anyway. But I think you'll see a less aggressive animal, like you said. I think you're right. Less aggressive, more looks, more confusing looks, more zone.
Right.
I dare you to get in the red zone. I'll give you a big play, get in the red zone and score on us.
Right. I agree. I think early on, at least, you focus more on confusing him. And then maybe once he starts to figure it out, or at least think he's figuring it out, that's when you start to apply pressure, where you do the typical Brent Venables, hey, the blitz is coming from somewhere. I got to figure out where it's coming from. Maybe hopefully by that point, Clemson's got a little bit of a lead, puts LSU in an uncomfortable position where they have to come from behind. Hopefully, at least, that's how I would hope to see it happening. By the way, I do have to mention, you know, I sent our buddy Bill an email and kind of extended an olive branch to him, asked him if he was going to the game, what he thought, and he never responded to me. So I'm a little offended that, you know, we have this opportunity to talk, you know, we have this connection, this game coming up. Bill is radio silence. I guess he's focused.
I get it.
I get it too.
I mean, I would be too. But you know what's, but also too, you know, I'm interested to see what LSU does defensively against Clemson.
Yeah.
Because
we have seen LSU
or are they going to spy Lawrence? Do you spy Lawrence? Do you use I don't know who, almost play a nickel and have that fifth DB come in as almost a safety type and spy Lawrence, because Lawrence really hurt Ohio State with his legs. And if you're LSU, do you try to take away ETN and also spy Lawrence too on that read option play and make Clemson beat you with the passing game when your strength of your LSU is your secondary?
Yeah, that's probably what you do.
And almost say, you know what, if you beat us this way, I tip my hat to you. You know, you beat us. You beat our best guys, our secondary.
And if we can slow you down and put some points on the board in the other way.
I mean, they're thinking the same thing, too. Can we hold Clemson to field goals?
Yeah.
same thing Clemson's thinking, too. I mean, they're thinking the same thing, too. Can we hold Clemson to field goals? Because Clemson's kicker sucks, by the way.
Oh, yeah. By the way, I was going to mention that. I think we should have a policy, Blake, where if we're within maybe the 35 to 20, not quite red zone, but 35 to 20, four down territory.
Yeah, maybe so. I mean, he might be good when he get like
inside the 20. I'm confident in him.
Yeah,
but
he's a little bit shaky. So, yeah, I mean, I understand that. But yeah, it's I don't know what to think in this game because I don't really. I know who passes the eye test more for me, but also know which team just. I mean, in big games they play big, and that's Clemson. So. I don't know.
And by the way, I didn't give my prediction.
Yeah, what's your score?
I have LSU winning and covering, but barely. Very similar score to yours, actually. I've got LSU winning 37-30.
Okay.
I actually feel like I almost said like, but I don't like this. I actually feel LSU will slow us down enough, and we won't quite be able to slow them down enough. I think it'll be an even game throughout. I like LSU maybe to get out to an early lead, sort of like Ohio State, but we're not able to come back in the same way that we did. I think Burrow will have a good game. I think he'll throw a pick or otherwise have some sort of mistake. But you know what, Blake? I think we will, too. I think we'll have a mistake or two as well. We're just due.
You think, I know Clemson's experience will play a role in this because Clemson is the more experienced team. I give them the edge there because they've been there before. But does the New Orleans factor kind of wipe that away? I don't know.
Maybe.
It's going to be in New Orleans. And
yeah.
There's going to be a lot more LSU fans than Clemson fans. So
you say a lot, Blake. What are we talking, 65-35?
Yeah, that's about right.
Yeah, well, that's not like a home game, you know? It's significant, but maybe not significant enough. And I think back to the national championship game when it was in Atlanta, when it was Alabama-Georgia. That didn't feel like a Georgia home game. And obviously it didn't matter as far as the
that's
final
true.
Score goes.
That's true. That's
so
true.
I think it's a little bump, but I don't think it's the typical, what does Vegas normally give you, 5 or 6 points for a home game?
Yeah,
nothing
exactly
like
that. Yeah, I agree with that.
Interesting. Yeah, so all right. So that's probably a pretty good place to wrap it up for the time being. Listeners, I hope you guys enjoyed this. Hope you guys enjoyed bowl season thus far. And hopefully you're Clemson fans and you will enjoy the national championship game as well. Bill, I'm disappointed that you didn't respond to me, man. I thought we were close. I thought we were friends. I guess
Bill,
maybe
good
not.
Good for you, man. Good for you, Bill. Don't respond. I don't blame him one bit for radio silence. I do the same thing.
No. Anyway.
Because there's so much superstition involved with this stuff, and I'm the same way. I mean, I get it.
Well, so listeners, if you want to drop us a line, Bill, if you'd like to reach out, maybe. Blake and Greg at yahoo.com. As always, we'd love to hear you guys' feedback, input, etc. We will come back, even if it's a repeat of the West Virginia Orange Bowl and it's, 40-point loss or whatever, we will come back and talk about this game. And we will also give our best of the decade, best player, best play, best game, or best team. No, what did I say? Best player? What
best
did we
play,
say?
Best team.
Best player, best play, best team from the past decade. I'm eager to hear what Blake's picks are. Listeners, we hope you guys have enjoyed this. Keep an eye out. Next week, we will give our recap, final recap, and also our best of the decade. Blake, any parting words of wisdom?
No, I just we got one more game, and so after that, I guess we got to find something else to do.
Yeah, I don't know what to do.
Like, I don't know, like, do, like, be a good husband or something. I don't know. God, I hope not.
Why start now, All right, listeners, enjoy the national championship game. We'll see you guys next week. Blake, it was fun, brother.
Yeah, man, enjoyed it.